to Die from Disturbed, our number one song for the fourth week in a row. That's it for us today on the Sideshow Countdown.
And it's good to have you back.
It's good to be back.
If you miss any part of the chart, go to thesideshowcountdown.com.
We'll see you next week for more of the biggest songs in rock and hand-picked songs by me, Nikki Six. See ya.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
Now.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF.
That's 313-298-9743.
Now, here are Peter and Julene.
Well, thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Hi, Julene.
Yes, welcome. Thank you. Hi, Peter.
It's such a beautiful night out. I can't wait. I shouldn't say that. I can't wait till the end of the show, but I'm just thinking that moon is just out there, and we're going to be strolling through the parking lot and
instead of the winters when we're trudging through the parking
lot. We're
going
to have puffy jackets on in no time at all.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, that little music.
It's my own music. I like to throw it out from over here, too.
But this is a phone-in talk show, and WRIF has set this up for you, the listener, to give your opinions, to speak about issues confronting our world or way down even to our neighborhoods. And ultimately, they're all connected, aren't they? I'm Peter Werby. Julene Jordan is my partner in thought crime. Does everybody know what that comes from?
I think probably not.
Yes, that's 1984, that you could commit thought crimes.
Which is a book.
The book, 1984, yes. By George Orwell. Yeah, good. If you were forced to read it in high school or something, it's always a good read to read as an adult.
It is. You know, I was never forced to read it in high school, and I read it after starting to work with you.
Yeah,
and I've read it a couple of times. Well worth it.
Our phone-in phone number, which we're having a little bit of problems with right now, so hang.
Not with the number. You can call.
Okay, well, yeah, we got to take the phones off hold then.
We just won't know your, we just won't know your number.
It's 313-298-WRIF, which is?
313-298-9743.
If you'd like to email us, because either the lines are filled, which they are not right now, or if you're a little bashful, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. We are on Facebook, and friends are wanted. It's Facebook.com/nightcall.
And there has been some serious discussion this week about getting more active on that. We got more active a little bit, at least by talking about it. I'm going to start posting some of the articles that you send to me throughout the week, and we like to get people's feedback on it.
Yeah, and
we can even talk about it, their feedback on the show. We can include that.
We could read from those. And the we here.
The we is me.
Yes, and Debbie.
And Debbie, of course.
Our
Debbie
friend
does
in Western Massachusetts.
Most everything. Does everything.
Wasn't that a movie?
Which one?
Never mind. Anyway, this show, as I said, has been set up by WRIF for many reasons. One of it's just been here for absolute ever since the history of WRIF.
This is the 40th anniversary.
Yeah, Harvey Ofshinsky started it all that. So anyway, it's a public affairs program. And so it's not strictly here to get this huge audience. Actually, we have a pretty big audience for this time of the evening, and because Sunday nights usually are thought of as sort of the dead end of things. Although there's great programming on WRIF.
You know, absolutely.
The countdown that just finished.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we have this show. So here's where I'm getting at. I mean, there's certain things that would make, in a way, more sense almost for Julene and I to bring up to get everybody all riled up. So people would...
We call those the sexy issues.
Yeah. So call and scream at one another and all of that. But I was thinking...
Well, it happens.
Yeah. Let me do this. Let me start with kind of a general way to approach this. When I was in college, as many sophomores and kind of people in high school do, we would entertain ourselves late at night, sometimes with enhanced consciousness, saying, like, wow, man, what is reality?
You know? Especially when in your day and age there, Peter.
When I was enhanced?
Probably had the leather headband and all.
Absolutely. So... And but this is a question that philosophers have addressed all the time. You might say, what is reality? Reality is what is in front of me. And that is actually one, I think, excellent answer, because there's all sorts of other answers. And the great philosophers of throughout the ages have addressed what constitutes reality. How can we affirm what reality is consists of, mm-hmm. right? And it's got a lot of different branches with big names that I won't even bother with. I'm sure I can remember them or pronounce them, but whatever.
The names of the philosopher?
Yeah, philosophies,
okay.
Actually. Yeah. Since I didn't graduate college.
I have a friend who's very into Hegel.
Hegel.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well.
Deep dude.
Can we go on?
Yeah. Okay.
Let me do this as an example. An anthropologist at Michigan State University, where I went, told me this, that there was an anthropologist that went to a village in the Amazon way back, and these people claimed that their shaman, the priest, could fly. And he did it frequently in rituals in which that was drug enhanced, because they did psychotropic drugs to bring themselves more in touch with what their sense of reality was, right?
Quite natural psychotropic
drugs.
So,
yes. So, yeah.
Chewed bark and...
Yeah, yeah. The guy said, well, could I witness him fly? Sure. So, who knows? Maybe it was only the men. Sometimes they were into that. Maybe it was the men and the women. Don't get mad.
Of course it was, Peter.
Maybe it was the men and the women. So they dose, right? And then they're doing their ecstatic rituals. And the shaman is sitting there, according to the anthropologist, right? He's sitting there. And then kind of when it's all over, the native people, the people of the village say, well... And he says, well, what? He said, did you see him? He rose up and he flew around the circle, and then he, he said, what do you mean? He never left the ground. And all the men look at him and laughed. You can't tell reality, pal. We all saw him fly. So
this
what,
is kind of like the Maharishis.
Yeah, something. Well, no. This is a little more. This is a little deeper than that. Uh-huh. So, the more trite thing of a tree falls in the forest and no one hears it. Has it made a sound? But I don't know. I'm actually more impressed, and I don't know whether this is actually rooted in Buddhism. But there's another little story that this young monk who's kept outside of the compound where all the Zen Buddhist monks live, he's banging on the doors of the gates of the compound and late at night, and these elderly monks say, well, what is it? What do you want? And he says, brother, I must know the meaning of life.
Mm-hmm.
And the monk takes his stave and hits the young one in the head and says, there, that'll give you something serious to think about.
Oh my gosh.
but extending...
It doesn't seem very Buddhist to me.
Well, yeah,
there was some whipping.
No, they're into cracking people.
The cracking, right.
But there's another way to put it. What's the meaning of life? Chop wood, carry water. You go, whoa, what does that mean? Chop wood, carry water. Well, all these things you got to think about, which is part of the process. And it could mean that...
you need to do the work to get somewhere.
And then it'll all come to you. Mm-hmm. Or that the meaning of life is in the simple things of life. Whatever. Where am I?
Okay.
Are we on the air? Oh, yeah, we are.
I'm enjoying it. I'm quite enjoying it.
So here's one more thing. The Black Panther Party, which, they weren't into heavy philosophy or anything like that. Actually, I think they were a little into Hegel.
Really?
Yeah. But one of them one time said, power is the ability to define phenomena. Power is the ability to define phenomena.
Okay.
The way the native people in the Amazon were able to define phenomena, the shaman flew. So for all practical purposes, for what everyone believed, he did. So here's my question. Let's get down to it. Why are these whack job right-wingers with all their insane opinions able to define reality and create the dialogue and the debates that take up our times with such utter nonsense that it drives me right over the edge?
Now I see where you're going.
They've convinced
the masses that they can fly, in a sense.
Well, at least a portion mention of them because where did I just, I must have put this on top of it, yeah, that a third of conservative Republicans say Barack Obama, the president of the United States, is a Muslim. So that is absolutely over the top. And you know, it's is it something that actually we should spend time debating? Well, a little, or I don't even know debating, discussing, because I think that it portends something much larger, something that's really happening in this country. But the fact that we are not debating, that the largest item on the agenda is not what I'm always talking about, our economic situation, our economic futures, speaks mightily to how the dialogues of our lives, of our communities, of our families, of our future, of our country have been hijacked by these whack jobs that go so far off the scale. I mean, I used to think I was pretty far off to the left, you know? I mean, I'm like a real conservative compared to these people. Our phones are acting up a little. If you're ringing, either try back or, if you would, please, you know, be patient with us. Well, I've been promoting, and in fact, tonight at 1 a.m., I have the pleasure of playing this interview that I did with Bob King, who's the new president of the United Auto Workers. And Bob King says that he no longer wants to simply be the head of what was once the most powerful unions in the union in the United States, but he wants to be part of a social movement that brings about a renewal of this country. Let me start off in another way. As if you've been listening to the program, you may remember that the UAW and the Rainbow Push Coalition and tons of other groups and people and individuals and union locals and people unaffiliated from all over the area are going to be gathering in Detroit on Saturday, August 28th at 10:30 a.m. downtown at the foot of Woodward. And it's going to be a march, and it's going to be a march to rebuild America, as they say in their demands, by enacting industrial and trade policies that create jobs, encourage manufacturing in America, and put workers first. We've been too far away from that. In fact, we've been completely away from that. We may have the richest country in the world. We may live in that, but you'd never know it from the level of poverty, the foreclosures, people losing their pensions. So the wealth that has been accumulated here. And remember, it is labor that creates wealth. Well, you know, that's actually not true. That's kind of an 18th century view of the creation of capital, if you will. And all the political economists of the era, everybody from Adam Smith, the great capitalist, if you would, the philosopher, for lack of a better word, Karl Marx, everybody believed that. But now, as we've seen, wealth creates wealth, and that's the stock market. This is phony wealth. I mean, there's no real there, and that, you know, that's one of the real problems that we face, and we'll talk about that a little more in a while. But anyway, so this march is going to occur. It also asks that the law be enforced regarding workers' rights, civil rights, industrial regulation, the creation of fair and just educational, economic, and health policies. Also, this march is going to call for an end to the ongoing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, redirect the war budget to rebuilding America. And you say, oh, hey, didn't they just end the war in Iraq? No, they didn't. We'll talk about that later as well. And also this march on August 28th calls for enactment of a moratorium on foreclosures. You know, they bailed out the Wall Street executives, paying them million-dollar bonuses, yeah. And our neighbors are getting stuck with it all. So, as I said last week, this is something that you can either, if we're lucky, get maybe a little notice of in the news of the Free Press, probably nothing in the national press, and or you can participate in it. Now, this is on the anniversary of the 1963 Martin Luther King led March on Washington, one of the signal events in American history that began this process that ended these conservative-backed segregation laws. Remember, it was always the conservatives that were the segregationists. The conservatives always said, if always wanted to conserve only the worst in America, So they opposed everything. They opposed voting rights for women. They've supported every war, no matter how bad it was. They opposed the labor movement in the 1930s, and they opposed the labor movement in the 1880s, the 1890s. I mean, they have an awful history. They supported slavery, conservatives.
Yeah, it goes on. The list is pretty long,
isn't
it?
The conservatives were the counter-revolutionaries in 1776. They wanted us to continue to be the vassal state of the King of England. So these people have nothing to offer. And the reason that they're so crazy, and the reason that the craziest of them all have come up with the most insane declarations and have no policy whatsoever. I mean, you ever, all these, I can't bring myself to mention any of their names. They never say, look, this is all being done pretty poorly. That Barack Obama is not successfully dealing with the economy. So here's my platform, my program instead. All right, that's not happening. So because they got nothing going for them whatsoever, so they got to start this this nonsense about that he's not a citizen, he's not a Muslim, or he is a Muslim. Now this whole thing with this Muslim center in New York and all that. So these people are really dangerous to the national dialogue and debate, because they are not about problem solving. They are about regaining the control of the governing racket, the government. And, you know, sure, they are maybe, you know, five times worse than the Democrats. Not that the Democrats are so good, but they're five times worse than the Democrats. They're 10 times more in bed with the corporations. They're 20 times more apt to let everybody, safeguards we have, anything from mining safety to Social Security, they're willing to leave it to the tender mercies of the market. Remember, a lot of them, they want to abolish Social Security, they want to abolish the minimum wage, all of that stuff, which is lunacy. But, you know, they weren't any different when any of this came out. They opposed the minimum wage, they opposed unions, they opposed Social Security, they opposed Medicare. You know, now they oppose any national health program and all this. So what we really have to do is get in a positive frame of mind. And I want to say that I think that more is needed, you know, but this march on August 28th could be very well a first step. It could be a launching step to a national renewal. But first off, it's going to take resistance to what's being done to all of us, all right, and to our communities. And you could say, like someone like me, well, nothing really bad's happening to me. I mean, I'm saying that, me, Peter Werby. But I live in a community of which there's foreclosures, that families that we counted on to be an integral part of our neighborhoods and our lives, suddenly their house is gone, or they're gone from their house. I mean, fortunately, we have a structure in our neighborhood and a block club and stuff like that that we try to deal with those kind of things. Hey, by the way, if you now are just dealing with life as a single individual, I don't mean, you know, unmarried, but a solitary individual, your chances of actually having the capacity to be part of great change is not very good. That's why I would be willing to bet 95% of you, well, maybe with this audience, 92% of you have never been in a huge march, that the feeling of exhilaration. I mean, in fact, once you get over a few thousand, and particularly if you thought you had a view of the world that was not being honored or respected or listened to or anything like that, the sudden emotional, I don't know what you'd call it, emotional impact, I guess, is astounding. I mean, I've been at ones, there's not much that turns the tears on with me, but I've been at any number of marches in Washington or even some in Detroit that, fought back tears. One that Bob King, the president of the UAW, takes union members down to every single year is the demonstrations against the School of America Fort Bragg. I can't remember now. I was there anyway, and this is the School of the Americas, where the Army would train all these South American soldiers from the dictatorships that were there in the, you know, from 60s, 70s, 80s into the 90s, and then they would go back and kill people in the opposition, trade union leaders, women, what have you, anybody that said, hey, could we not have a dictatorship here? Bob King brings people down there. Well, they do a little ceremony where they read off the names of people that were killed by graduates of our school of the Americas. And every time they mention the person's name, the crowd answers back, Presente. I mean, he's still here. He's been killed, or she's been killed, but the you know, the memory still stays with us. All right, but let's do this. So we've got a couple of you on hold, and I'm going to leave you there. I'd appreciate it if you'd stay there. I want to. We're having a little bit of an internal problem here, but it will be dealt with. Now let's talk back. Let's go back again to what I was talking about, and that is the definition of reality is power accruing to you if you can define reality. If you're the one that can make everybody jump. And the big issue now is this Muslim center. And today, big story, front page of the New York Times website. You can go to nytimes.com. Yahoo News, news.yahoo.com. Muslim center dispute sparks New York rallies. Now, what this is all about, and maybe some of you don't know, these very prominent Muslims have done work for both the Bush and the Obama administration in trying to create interfaith dialogue, decided they wanted to put up a Muslim center. Much like, I don't know, the YMCA or YHMA, a Young Hebrew Men's Association. In other words, it was going to be a Muslim center, and it was sports stuff, and they would also have the prayer. There wasn't a mosque. They're not building this huge mosque. So there was nothing going on about it at all, right? And until the right wing saw, wow, this is pretty cool. We can build this up in a manner that it will help us politically. Today in the New York Times, Frank Rich column, he says, we owe thanks to Justin Elliott of Salon for the single most revealing account of this controversy's evolution. In other words, how did it begin? And as I say, there were demonstrations against it today in New York City. He reports that there was zero reaction to what they call the Ground Zero Mosque from the frontline right wing or anyone else except marginal bloggers when the New York Times first reported on it, on its plans. It's called Park 51 plans in a lengthy front-page article on December 9th of last year. The sole exception came some 2 weeks later at Fox News, you know, this right-wing network, the owner of which just donated $1 million to the Republican Party. So the owner of Fox News just gave $1 million to Fox News. Why the Republican Party doesn't give $1 million to Fox News the other way around? Because essentially it's just a mouthpiece for far right wing Republicans. Anyway, on Fox News, Laura Ingraham, who is a far right wing commentator, she was filling in on the O'Reilly Factor. She interviewed Daisy Kahn, the wife of the project's organizer, Iman Faisal Abdul Rauf. This right winger gave the plans her blessing. She said, okay, this sounded very cool. She says, quote, I can't find many people really have a problem with it. As well, Ingraham might. Rauf is no terrorist. He has been repeatedly sent on speaking tours by the Bush and Obama State Departments alike to promote tolerance in Arab and Muslim nations. This is the man who is behind establishing this Muslim center in downtown Manhattan. As Jeffrey Goldberg of the Atlantic reported last week, Rauf gave a moving elegy at a memorial service for Daniel Pearl, the Wall Street Journal reporter murdered by Islamist terrorists in Pakistan, and he gave it at the Manhattan synagogue B'nai Jeshurun. Pearl's father was in attendance. You think this guy, you know, would be at any of this if he was some, you know, terrorist or something like that?
Hey, just so you know, I'm back. We had some technical difficulties I had to deal with our phone system, but we're up and okay. We're running. We're ready to go. So 313-298-WRIF.
Yeah. In the 5 months after the Times' initial account, there was no newspaper articles on the project at all. It was only in May of this year that the Rupert Murdoch, that's the guy who gave $1 million to the Republican Party, the Rupert Murdoch's...
You can do it.
I can. Right. One more time. The Rupert Murdoch axis of demagoguery revved up, jettisoning Ingram's benign take for a New York Post jihad. That's the Post is a Murdoch paper. The paper's inspiration was a rabidly anti-Islam blogger best known for claiming that Obama was Malcolm X's illegitimate son.
Oh, jeez.
See, that's what I mean. These
stretching it a little?
These people, stretching's okay. These people are crazy.
Yeah, true.
You know, I suppose you can write anything you want, but I mean, could they possibly believe this? Soon the rest of the Murdoch empire and its political allies piled on, promoting the incendiary libel that, quote, radical Islam is behind the Ground Zero mosque where tantamount either to neo-Nazis, according to the Wall Street Journal, or actual Nazis, according to Newt Gingrich. So nobody objected to it. And wait a minute, here, there's actually another column, which is pretty cool here as well, from, where is it? Nicholas Kristof. He says, their opponents seem to be of the mosque. And here they were. By the way, there were 500 people in downtown Manhattan opposing this today.
500.
500, and it's front page. On June 21st, folks, there were 10,000 liberals, leftists, progressives, socialists, people like that, that marched down the main street of Detroit. You think it was on the front page of the New York Times? You think it made it to Yahoo News? This was the opening march for the United, the United States Social Forum.
Yep.
Yeah. But anyway, it says... So Nicholas Kristof says the first is that a huge this is two fundamental misconceptions. The first is that a huge mosque would rise on hallowed land at Ground Zero. In fact, the building would be something like a YMCA and two blocks away and apparently out of view from Ground Zero. He says this is a dense neighborhood packed with shops, bars, liquor stores, not to mention the New York Dolls Gentlemen's Club and the Pussycat Lounge, which says that it arranges lap dances in a private room, presumably to celebrate the sanctity of the neighborhood. Why do so many Republicans find strip clubs appropriate for the Ground Zero neighborhood but object to a house of worship? Are lap dance more sanctified than an earnest effort to promote peace? The second misconception underlying this debate is that Islam is an inherently warlike religion that drives believers to terrorism. You know what, folks? I don't agree with them here. I think, you know, I'm sorry if I'm stepping on some toes, but almost every large organized religion, in fact, drives believers to acts of outrage and murder and faith strife and all that. Every single one of them. But he says, sure, the Islamic world is disproportionately turbulent, and mullahs sometimes cite the Quran to incite murder. But don't forget that the worst brutality in the Middle East has often been committed by more secular rulers like Saddam Hussein and Hafez al-Assad from Syria. The mastermind of the 1970 Palestine airline hijackings, George Habash, was a Christian. But he also says, remember that historically some of the most shocking brutality in the region, the Middle East, was justified by the Bible, not the Quran. Crusaders coming from Europe massacred so many men, women, and children in parts of Jerusalem that a Christian chronicler described an area ankle deep in blood. When they came there, they just killed everybody. While burning Jews alive, the Crusaders sang, "Christ, we adore thee."
Oh, my gosh.
So, don't give me anything about peaceful religion. One way or another. Now, I think the important thing here, and why I think it's worth talking about, there was somebody on here that said, oh yeah, one of the protesters, Dominic DeRubio, whose uncle, David P. DeRubio, was a firefighter who died in the World Trade Center. And you can understand how a number of these people could be genuinely upset. I mean, they're upset because they're misconceiving where the blame lies. In fact, the solution to the problem probably lies with the people that want this Islam center there. But he says the level of defiance is running high. 500 people come out. You know, 53% of Manhattanites approve of it. The majority of New Yorkers, I think they were 53% against it. The same figure of people that lived in Manhattan. I don't know if you know people that live in Manhattan. I've talked to any number of people who saw the planes go over. And many people that were right there when it happened, that were running down the street. Anyway, this the man whose uncle died at the World Trade Center, he said, the defiance is running high. They're saying, we're doing this whether you like it or not. He's talking about the people that say they're going to put this up. Well, is that it? If you say you don't want me in your neighborhood because of my skin color or my religion or something like that, does that mean then I don't have a right to be there? I mean, come on. This is, you know, aren't all these conservatives and Republicans about, you know, property values and the supremacy of them? These people own the land. They don't want to do anything malign with it. They don't want to hurt anybody with it. In fact, the people behind it are committed to interfaith dialogue. But I think the most important thing, and then we'll get you on the air, 313-298-WRIF, is, well, here's one article. It says, Republicans seize on mosque issue ahead of elections. All right? So you have some deep feelings about 9/11. You have some deep feelings about who was responsible and the religion responsible. And these guys sit in a room and they say, you know, we can jack these people around. Because, you know what? They're not real smart. And we can rip their emotions sideways to Friday and we'll get their vote. They won't think about anything else. They'll think about, is there a ground zero mosque? And we won't have to deal with our responsibility for ruining the economy, for starting wars that had no business ever to be started. We'll just get them, and they'll get us back in power, and we'll be running the racket. And we'll get the big corporate guys back in absolute power again. But the other thing is, and this is what is so important to us, U.S. anti-Islam protests seen as lift for extremists. Right? So here's 500 people. It doesn't amount to much. It should be, listen, if there's 10,000 people marching, for, you know, left people, leftist people marching down the street in Detroit, that gets ignored by the New York Times. Why do they put 500 people marching in New York City on the cover? Or you say, well, it's a New York paper. Why does Yahoo News? Yahoo News never mentioned the United States Social Forum. They had about 20,000 people in attendance in June. And some of you in Detroit, you're saying, I never heard about this. Anyway, some counterterrorism experts say the anti-Muslim sentiment that has saturated the airwaves and blogs in the debate over plans for an Islamic center near Ground Zero in Lower Manhattan is playing into the hands of extremists by bolstering their claims that the United States is hostile to Islam. Opposition to the senator by the center by prominent politicians and other public figures in the United States has been covered extensively by the news media in Muslim countries. At a time of concern about radicalization of young Muslims in the West, it risked adding new fuel to Al-Qaeda's claim that Islam is under attack by the West and must be defended with violence, some specialists on Islamic militancy say. Let's see, Brian Fishman, who studies terrorism for the New America Foundation, says, I know people in this debate don't intend it, but there are consequences for these kinds of remarks. So these opportunists, these people that are trying to make political hay out of something that heretofore was not even noticed, didn't even raise the needles, is putting you and I in more danger. These people are the worst thing in America.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale. And that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Limescale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove limescale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you don't have coverage, listen to this. AccuQuote can help save you up to 70% on a term life policy that's right for you. Pick up the phone and call AccuQuote at 800-654-2075. AccuQuote has helped hundreds of thousands of people save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how. AccuQuote monitors hundreds of top-rated life insurance products so you can get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. Rates for women are even lower. A short 5-minute call is all it takes. Call AccuQuote for a free life insurance quote at 800-654-2075. Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Find out how much you can save on life insurance. Call AccuQuote for your free quote. 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
Detroit's rock station, 101, The Riff.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
I'd like a nice skim, no whip latte.
Hey, you're the Red Defender, right?
Yes.
I saw you in the paper. You saved a runaway train.
That's right.
So shouldn't you be out saving something?
I already stopped a bank heist this morning.
Evil doesn't take a break.
Can I sit down for a second?
Hey, dial back the caffeine, man.
Saving the world isn't easy. Saving a life is. One pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Go to bloodsaves.com. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
When I do it, I feel the blood rushing through me. And I keep going back for more.
Carmen Castillo is under the influence of Dana, her volunteer trainer. By spending just one day a week with kids like Carmen, Dana helps them develop interests that keep them away from drugs. Be a coach, a mentor, a volunteer, because you have something to offer. Log on to helpyourcommunity.org or call 877-KIDS-313. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
My name's Rachel, and I'm 10 years old. I like riding my bike, playing soccer, and in 8 years, I'll be an alcoholic. I'll start drinking in middle school, just at parties. My friends will drink, so I will too.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
My parents won't really know what's going on yet. I mean, I'll do okay in school, but when I drink, I'll do some things I don't really want to do. So by the time my parents talk to me about it, alcohol won't be my only problem.
Alcohol affects their judgment and their future. So start talking before they start drinking.
My parents won't believe it could happen to me.
For more information on teens and alcohol, and to learn what you can do, visit the web at stopalcoholabuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. Jalene is out of the room, kind of deal with our technical problems. Just keep ringing, and eventually Stephanie, who we didn't give a shout-out to tonight yet, will answer your calls. 313-298-WRIF. I began the show at about 11 p.m. Eastern Time talking about the Woodward Cruise. If you're in some other part of the world, this is a million people show up to line our main drag of Woodward Avenue, and people bring out thousands of restored old cars from the 50s, the 40s, the 60s, the 70s, I guess maybe now even an 80s, one like that. So we might as well start with somebody who wants to comment on that. Here's Mike from Birmingham. Mike, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
How you doing, Peter?
Good.
This is Mike Gibson, a.k.a. Monster Mike.
Monster Mike, okay.
Anyways, yeah, I wanted to comment about the Dream Cruise. I happen to live on 14 Mile Road, just off Woodward, about 10 houses down.
Uh-huh.
And yesterday I walked over to the Dream Cruise, and they're on the corner of 14 and Woodward with this guy. You know, of course, there's crowds, tons of people there. But there's this one guy. He was holding up this sign that said, "Abortion kills children," and it was like this graphic, colored photograph of this aborted fetus with like its head cut off.
Can we ruin everybody's time?
Let me tell you something. Did the abortion bus make the appearance this year?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Because last year there was a whole bus of these, just fascinating.
You may be having
lovely pictures.
You may be having a good time, folks.
Yeah. Hope you're enjoying that 57 Chevy. But here's a bunch of abortions on a bus. So was anyone saying anything to him?
Well, what I wanted to say was that he's wearing a T-shirt. He happened to be wearing a T-shirt. On the T-shirt, it said, on the front of the T-shirt, it said intolerant. And then on the back of the T-shirt, it said, "Jesus says abortion is a sin, homosexuality is a sin, and Islam is a sin."
Oh, my gosh.
Well, yeah.
People were arguing with him back and forth. He's actually trying to provoke a response in people.
Well, you know, that's
this
interesting,
is what
Mike.
This guy wants, too, right, Peter? This guy wants to argue with people. He wants...
Sure.
Further spew his BS at them, other than if the sign and the T-shirt aren't offensive enough.
Yeah, and it's like the guy that wants to bring his sidearm, his plain view.
I won't go and look at that art without my gun.
People are telling me all over the place, and they're not going to go to this Royal Oak Arts Beats and Eats if somebody's going to be there with a holster.
I'm still going to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing that got me was that it was right on the corner of 14, right where I live. I mean,
well, he has the right to be there. I mean,
I went for a walk of a couple miles down Woodward. Mm-hmm. I didn't see anything like this other than on 14 Mile, right in front of where I live.
I'll tell you, we've been talking about this Islam center in Manhattan, Mike, and somebody who apparently got impatient, he was wanted to say that that the Constitution says, "In God we trust." So, the people, I was just thinking, Jesus did never denounce, what did you say, never denounced abortion? I don't think abortion is mentioned in the Bible at all.
Mm-hmm.
Did not denounce homosexuality, and what was the other thing? The third thing?
Islam.
Oh, Islam, and did not denounce Islam. All right, Mike, thank you very much. Thanks for that report.
Which proves this guy just doesn't really know Jesus very well.
But somebody printed it up as a T-shirt, but also that they don't even know the Constitution because it says it is often seen on the Internet to find God in the Constitution. All one has to do is read it and see how often the framers use the words God or Creator, Jesus, or Lord. Except for one notable instance, however, none of these words ever appear in the Constitution, neither the original nor in any of the amendments. The notable exception is found where they give the dates, the 17th day of September in the year of our Lord, 1787, which was the way they gave it. So the idea, I mean, this the Constitution is a wholly secular document. Yeah, it's an administrative document. It's nothing. So the idea that if you're still listening, my friend, do you need to go check this out? Maybe here's an idea: read the Constitution.
Yes.
Yeah.
Online in a lot, you can find it right now.
Yeah. All right.
Three clicks away.
Here is Meyer in Macomb. Meyer, hi. It's Peter and Jolene. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me, guys. How are we doing tonight?
We're doing good.
Great. Thank you.
I just wanted to say I'm actually a Muslim born in America. I am also a Republican, in fact. And
sorry.
I know it's strange. Everybody in my mosque actually makes fun of me.
Oh, no.
When September 11th happened, I did not have to offer my condolences to Americans. I was actually grieving along with my fellow Americans. There are Muslims all over this country that have loyalty to this country. There are Muslims in the military, in fact. There are Muslims all over the world, including actually there were 10,000 Muslims in Canada that when September 11th happened, they donated blood to the victims of the Twin Towers. So we are American. We are a part of this country. We have loyalty to this country. And Islam, the word itself, in fact, means peace. So if there's an Islamic cultural center at Ground Zero that is going to offer peace, number one, there shouldn't be anything wrong with that. Number two, that's actually better. That's extending the hand and saying, listen, this is what peace is supposed to be. And in fact, a memorial like that is beautiful, in fact, actually to show that, you know what, the nut jobs that did this, we do not accept.
Well, what's interesting, Meyer, though, is I don't know if you heard me last week. I was saying that if they decided they were going to put a church, a Christian church, in downtown Oklahoma City, and people said it's a desecration because Timothy McVeigh was a Christian.
Yeah.
What's up with that? I mean, people would think they were crazy.
It's unbelievable. In fact, if you were to ask me, at Ground Zero, there should be a mosque, a church, and a synagogue. Put a Hindu temple in there as well. In fact, unite them all together and say, this is who we are, and this is who we are as an actual nation. This is what America is.
You know, I agree with you.
I wanted to stress your one point. In fact, when you were talking about the Crusades, it's interesting because Salahuddin and King Richard, right, of England, in fact, these two leaders who were combating against each other had so much respect for each other. Different faiths, different religions, yet they had so much respect and love for each other. Richard offered his daughter as marriage to Salahuddin in order to create that peace. And Salahuddin, in fact, even told Richard, he said that if there is any king that is going to take this city after Richard left, if there is any king that is going to take the city of Jerusalem, I would not want them to be anyone but you, whether he be Muslim, Christian, or Jew.
Well, you know, Meyer, that's a nice story. But another time. But all of those faiths were these bloody swords that had genocide as one of their major activities. So
You're absolutely, you're 100% right, actually. But at least they had that type of decency, in fact.
That's good. I mean, listen, Christianity has always had priests on both sides of the wars, blessing the troops, and yet the gentle, peaceful people here in Detroit, for instance, there's a group called Pax, P-A-X, Christi.
Peace,
they're some of the biggest promoters of peaceful existence in the world and in between faiths. So there certainly are those people. All right, Meyer, thank you very much. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF.
And we do have a couple open lines, so feel free to call in and chime in on any and all of the above. Last week, everyone wanted to talk about those guns at Arts, Beats, and Eats.
Are you trying to provoke them again? Don't.
No. Yeah. I don't provoke.
No. Here's Mike in Richmond. Hey, Mike, it's Peter and Jolene on WRIF. Thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Oh, hey, what's up, guys?
We're doing the show.
Little talk show. What about you?
I'm just hanging out.
Cool.
You know, good time. Listen to your show.
Yeah. Great. Anything more than that?
Actually, my initial question to you was, how come you continually play the left versus the right? When sometimes you do acknowledge that, you know, this dichotomy is kind of tearing us apart, you know, in many ways. You know, can you speak on that a little bit?
Well, yeah. I mean, uh, I, I Neither Jolene or I are supporters of the Democratic Party. Sometimes, like this last time and other times, I'll vote for Democratic Party candidates as a way of just forestalling, worse people. Like this, like coming in this election, I have no intention of voting for Sander Levin.
Which is the Levin who had the pie thrown in?
That was his older brother.
Okay.
Yeah. That Senator Carl. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Senator Carl.
You'd never throw a pie in.
So I'm going to vote for the, Green Party, because there's an old one of the things third parties always say: it's better to vote for something you want and not get it than to vote for something you don't want and get it. I mean, it was very important, I think, to elect Barack Obama. The idea that John McCain and Sarah Palin, if you can imagine that, would have become president and vice president of the United States, would have essentially been, since the previous two elections had been stolen by George W. Bush, and if John McCain would have actually won it and been an affirmation of the injury that the United States suffered at the hands of the Republican Party, that was just intolerable. I don't think any major or important change is going to come out of the Democratic Party unless they're pushed. I mean, they were pushed in the 1960s, for instance, by the Civil Rights Movement. I mean, to the point where they had to sacrifice their entire racist base in the South. I mean, they saw the country was going to just explode unless they did what was necessary to pass civil rights legislation and to end segregation. Well, the conservative Democrats, the most important thing there, that they were conservatives who wanted to maintain segregation, and most of their white constituency then switched parties to the Republican Party, realizing that that was the party and is the party of racism now.
You're not saying by any means that all Republicans are racist.
No. But
sometimes people take statements like that and.
But almost all. But almost all racists are Republicans.
Okay. I know some racist Democrats.
Are they?
Yeah, that's sure. You know there are, Peter.
Okay.
In the South.
You know what? If you're a Democrat in the South,
yeah,
you are usually pretty liberal.
Okay.
All right. I'm not trying to, and again, what is race, and all that, but I don't know. Give me a response, Mike.
Well, all I got to say is that it seems to me that both parties have been, playing off each other to move forward in one direction that enables them to continually usurp wealth and keep knowledge at a certain distance from most people.
I agree.
The more that we
dumb them down, huh?
Each other off, the left and the right, the liberal and the conservative, on this, on that. No, we're all individuals here. We all have our own ability to see what is our own existence. And I think that gets back to the initial question that you were talking about on your show, is what is reality? Reality is whatever we believe it is, that's what I think. And
I think there are certain characteristics, though, that do define people on the left and right. There's no doubt about it. There's just no getting around it. And the levels of those characteristics are, quite different, quite vast.
All right, Mike, thank you very much. I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, sometimes that we spend so much time bashing Republicans, it seems by implication, then we would think the Democratic Party is wonderful. There actually are some very good, I would say this, that most of the good people that I know in this country, including my family, are considered themselves Democrats.
Yeah,
and
my family, good people, Republicans.
But, but it's always trying to, what is it called, make a silk purse out of a sow's ear.
Uh-huh.
I mean, my father and his wife spent, quite aged, and spent an enormous amount of time in the election of Barack Obama. And I think my father, he died last year. If he would have been alive still, would have been so immensely disappointed.
Disappointed, especially, yeah. Would you say, especially about Afghanistan?
Sure.
Yeah,
that would be the thing. We'll talk about some wars, some other stuff when we come back. Matt and Paul from Detroit, stay on the line. Goodbye, Mike. We'll see you. I'll talk to you another time.
We do have open lines, so give a call, because we have a whole new segment starting soon.
Yep.
Do people sometimes describe you as a saver? A bit frugal, penny-wise, and somewhat thrifty?
You know, cheap.
If that sounds like you, you're going to love the newest addition to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Coupon crazy!
At MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, you'll still find great gift certificates for local businesses with goods and services on sale for more than half off. Find money-saving online coupons that you can download right now and start saving immediately. Log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and save big.
With online coupons from Autolab USA, with over 20 locations in the Metro Detroit area and a 12,000-mile, 12-month warranty. Hagopian Rug Care Center with 5 locations in Metro Detroit. They're the leader in carpet, rug, furniture, and tile cleaning.
If you're looking for ways to enjoy life and stay within your budget, then go
coupon crazy
now at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. That's MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online home for great ways to save big at local Michigan businesses.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that now it's more important than ever to buy an American-made vehicle. We at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new Lincoln MKS, the sleek Lincoln MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the Lincoln MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. We encourage you to check out our virtual showroom on our website, Demmer.com. You can check out our vehicle inventory, and you can bet that if we don't have the vehicle you're in the market for, we'll do our very best to get it for you. While you're online, we invite you to get a no-obligation internet price quote. Whether you come into our newly renovated dealership or visit us online, we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury invite you to experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS that you can't afford to pay? Or are you stuck in a tax payment plan that's getting you nowhere? The IRS is now taking very aggressive actions, such as bank levies and wage garnishments. If you owe the IRS at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debt for less than you owe, remove penalties and interest, and protect you from bank levies and garnishments. As a hardworking American, you do have rights. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
101 The Riff.
Energy Honky Team, get in that house and waste some energy.
No problem. It's got leaky windows
and no attic insulation.
This house is under attack by energy hogs. They show up anywhere energy's wasted.
The washer, it's not Energy Star rated.
You have the power to get rid of energy hogs.
Someone's home!
And he's got energy-efficient light bulbs.
Go to energyhog.org for fun games and lots of hog-busting tips.
Energyhog.org? That's it! Get out of there!
Wait for me!
Brought to you by the Alliance to Save Energy, the Department of Energy, and the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm Faith Hill. You know the expression, practice makes perfect? Well, maybe nowhere is that more true than in music. Music study is one of the most valuable ways that a student can spend time. A young person who practices and studies music reinforces teamwork, communication skills, self-discipline, and creativity. All the qualities that kids need to be successful in their other schoolwork. As parents, think about encouraging your children to try out several instruments at school until they find the one that really clicks. Talk to the school's music teacher about finding affordable lessons so your child can see his or her progress as time goes by. And please don't forget that your kids all have an instrument that's free and sounds wonderful. Their voices.
A PSA brought to you by NEMC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at bornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beech? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air? Would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
August 31st at the Palace of Auburn Hills. And the Riff has your tickets. Starting with row number 5 all the way to the front row. Listen and win from your concert station in the Motor City. 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. 101 WRIF. And WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, welcome back to our second hour, 1 a.m., a couple of interesting interviews, and if I look at my own website...
Yeah, what you got for us,
I don't
Peter?
Know. Oh, yeah, actually, I can get my website up right... Oh, you know what? I don't think I ever...
Posted it. Have you been preoccupied?
I have. Painting my house.
Painting before politics.
Yeah.
Blasphemy, Peter.
I was thinking about telling a really stupid joke. But
no, don't do it.
No.
Don't do it.
Yeah,
because there's too many serious things to talk about. What have the Tea Partiers been doing? They've kind of died down a little bit, haven't they?
Yeah, talk about a flash in
the
pan.
Baggers. Where are the baggers
Where are the baggers? No baggers.
They'll be back.
Here, one of the things we're always talking about, where is our money? We're the wealthiest country in the world, highest percentage of poor people in a country, in an industrialized country, all of that. Well, here, part of it is explained here. Here's an article in the New York Times of August 16th. Pentagon cites concerns in China military growth. Uh-oh. China has increased spending on a military that is becoming larger and more effective, even as Beijing has rebuffed exchanges with the Defense Department that could improve stability.
Isn't it one of the largest?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, the stability from...
Well, one of the largest what?
One of the largest militaries... Anywhere, isn't it? In China?
China? Well, I don't know. They got a pretty big country. It's a most populous country in the world. Here in this article it says. Senior Pentagon officials acknowledge that much of the Chinese military modernization program may reflect the rational ambition of a rising global power, albeit one that may be a worrisome rival to American interests in the Pacific region. Now, what other countries are in the Pacific region? China. why do we have interests over there? They don't have any interests over here.
We owe them so much money, Peter.
Yeah, the other way. Wait a minute. Do we owe them? Oh, yeah, we owe them. You're right. Billions and billions. Yeah. I mean, you know what World War II in the Pacific was fought for? Essentially, control of China because it was colonized by European countries, and the United States had interests over there. And the Japanese Japanese thought, hey, we can, you know, get rid of these Westerners. Why are they there? So that was what the war was about, or the whole what they call the Pacific Rim. I mean, they had, for Little Island, they had some big plans. Across the American government, from the White House to the Pentagon to Congress, officials expressed concern that China's lack of openness about the growth, capabilities, and intentions of its military injects instability to a vital region of the globe. That's because we're there. Why are we there? They ain't here. They don't have any military forces here.
You know why, Peter? Because we're everywhere.
Yes, there you go. Now, China's overall spending on national defense for 2000... Now, here you... And there's the idea, of course. These are the evil Orientals, right? China's overall spending on national defense for 2009 was estimated at $150 billion, an increase of 7.5%, but only one-fifth of what the Pentagon spent just to operate and carry out wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And that says nothing about the overall military budget of the United States. Mm-hmm. United States has a war budget bigger than all of the rest of the countries of the world combined.
Yeah.
Combined. Yeah. China here. So why are they, you know, they're expanding their military, they're modernizing it, they're not being open, they don't want to have exchanges. What is with these people? Well, in the article, you go down a little more, it says China's arsenal of missiles arrayed across the strait from Taiwan, an American ally considered a wayward province by Beijing, did not substantially grow in numbers, but is being upgraded to be more capable. Of the many potential points of conflict, Taiwan remains the most notable, as China froze military-to-military relations with the Defense Department earlier this year after an announcement that the United States was selling more than $6 billion in weapons to Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
Hello!
We're messing around again.
Yeah.
Stirring the hornet's nest.
I mean, could you imagine if China was going to sell $6 billion worth of missiles to Cuba?
Really?
You ever hear of the Cuban Missile Crisis?
Yeah.
Man. So,
and
why in the world would China want to increase its military budget because we're just over there protecting American interests? Tens of thousands of South Korean and United States troops began a new round of war games on Monday as North Korea threatened a merciless counterblow, blah, blah, blah. The drills are the South's third major exercise, the second conducted with the United States. The 11-day drill is the largest annual joint United States-South Korean military exercises. This year, they involve 56,000 South Koreans and 30,000 Americans in South Korea. Again, can you imagine that if China was having war games off of the coast, the Georgia coast, with Cuban troops.
Exactly.
Here's what they really worry about.
Cannot imagine.
After three decades of spectacular growth, China passed Japan in the second quarter to become the world's second largest economy behind the United States. So why is the average person in the United States, if we got the largest economy in the world, how come people are facing foreclosures and losing
all
their medical?
All those jobs are over there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, actually, there was, I don't know what happened, that little piece that there were these strikes in Bangladesh, and they arrested all these labor leaders, right?
Oh.
Where is
it? Sounds familiar.
Yeah. And it's, they called it a low-wage alternative to China. Remember, we had jobs here. We made shoes and cars and all this other stuff that's now made in China. And the reason that these U.S. corporations took them there is because they didn't want to have to pay U.S. middle-class wages. They didn't want to allow us to have a middle-class standard of living.
Yeah, it was a big cha-ching.
Yeah, so they went to China. Well, first they went to Mexico, then they went to China.
Yeah.
And now when there's labor unrest in China, just like there was, say, in the 1880s or something in this country, or maybe they're even at the 1930s in China, they said, man, we got to take this stuff particularly...
Taiwan.
Yeah. No, to...
Because I see a lot of things made in Taiwan.
Oh, Taiwan, yeah. No, you're right. But this case was Bangladesh.
Mm.
So they're saying, well, gee, you want to have a decent wage. And the decent wage that they got was $48 a month.
Oh. Wow, that was so nice of them.
They were. This was in Bangladesh. They had just gotten 48. They were making $24 a month.
Oh.
And they said, well, it's cheap over there. You know, folks, it ain't any cheaper. It just means that's what you have to live on for a month.
Yeah.
All right, got some open lines for you. 313-298-WRIF. Everyone waiting is from the city of Detroit. How about that?
Well, right on.
Here's Matt from Detroit. Matt, hi. It's Peter and Jolene. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
Well, I had a couple points I wanted to make. The most recent one is about the poverty thing. I think that sometimes it's not quite a fair comparison between the United States definition of poverty and what you would consider a world definition of poverty, or even one in China.
Like Bangladesh, et cetera, yeah.
Poverty is pretty high. I mean, it's like $22,000. $22,000 a year in China puts you way above the poverty line. So it's not quite a fair comparison, you know what I'm saying?
Well, listen, it has to do with some people are able to buy $35 million homes like they just, and other people are suffering foreclosure. And poor people in this country, it ain't a good state to be. I mean, you got people like that lying, what's the big conservative commentator? Never mind, I don't even want to say his name, saying that poor people in the United States live better. He said this, live better than middle-class people in Europe, and which means he, being a multimillionaire, he absolutely knows nothing about how poor people in this country live. There's job insecurity.
It's called how they survive, Peter.
Poor health, because other countries you have national health care for them. Obesity, lots, you know, on and on and on. There's no reason.
Hunger, starvation as well.
Yeah. Well, not starvation, but hunger.
Close. I mean, some of these kids don't eat all weekend.
The only reason that there's poverty in this country is because we've got a distribution of income like we had in the 1920s here.
I mean, it's certainly very strange. Even Warren Buffett went on a Senate committee and said that it's getting ridiculous, the distribution of wealth. I agree at that point. But you still can't deny that in a lot of countries, like Mexico, for instance, when you're poor, you're living in absolute squalor.
No, I'm talking about, I'm sorry if I didn't make myself clear, Matt. I meant, modern industrial countries. And by the way, we're a little bit more than a modern industrial country. We're the wealthiest country in the world. Why would there be any poor people at all, let alone tens of millions of poor people, in a country that's the wealthiest country in the world, unless there's a group of people that are significantly hogging the wealth that's been created?
All right, but I think in some regards, and I agree that there needs to be nationalized health care. No one should fall through the cracks to the point where they're starving or suffering from some kind of illness that they can't get cured. But having some kind of incentive for working hard, I think, is a staple of what makes us great.
Wait. Do you think this country is still great? I mean, it has been down the crapper. I mean, that everything that we were once number one in, from education to health care to, average income and what, you know, do you think there's other countries in the world that are having this massive home foreclosures like we are? There's nothing like this. And people can work their butts off, and people did. I mean, we get the least amount of vacations of any industrialized country in the world. In many, we get one of the lowest compensations and on and on and on like that. And then these people are just thrown on the garbage heap. Yeah, you worked your butt off. Well, too bad you're out of a job.
Yeah, and oh, too bad you retired. Now we're going to take away these benefits from you and these benefits from you. You know, we promised you these. Thanks for your 35, 40 years of service. But, you know, hey, this is the way it is. Hey, Peter, real quick, an email from Tom in Royal Oak.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. I agree with you, too, on the guns at Arts, Beats, and Eats. They have a right to open carry, but, well, they just shouldn't at this event, he says. A fun and silly protest for this would be for people to carry big slingshots sticking out of their back pockets like the old Huck Finn ones
from
forked wood branches. It would make a point, but also make fun of them.
I was thinking about going down to this, is it Zocar's, that this novelty place, and getting like maybe like a 4-foot plastic gun.
No, you weren't.
Why?
You were not.
Why?
Peter, why would you do that? Why would you? You're joking. I can see it
no,
in your
it wasn't.
Face.
No, here. This is...
Come on.
No, I'm serious.
Don't be ridiculous.
Here, I found the Bangladesh article. Arrest 21 after rallies. Arrested three garment industry labor leaders and 18 other people. That, this sounds like the 1930s,
you know, and I'm
right?
sure the police officers who are listening tonight don't enjoy the idea of you bringing a plastic gun anywhere.
Oh, but a four-foot one?
What are you going to do? Pull it out like all gangster style?
Yeah. International advocacy groups like Human Rights Watch and the International Labor Rights Forum have criticized the arrest, calling them a tactic for intimidating workers in a powerful industry that supplies Western retailers like Walmart stores and H&M. In other words, we're able to get cheap stuff because these people are being suppressed by the government of Bangladesh. And here, last month, a government-appointed wage board raised the minimum wage in Bangladesh's garment industry to 3,000 taka a month, or $43. That was up from about half. That was the first increase since 2006. This is why we have cheap goods, because we're riding on the back of other people. All right. never mind. I'm just looking at something here. Let's see. Here is Paul. Paul's in Detroit. Hey, Paul, you're on the air. Thank you. You're.
Hi. How you doing?
We're doing good.
Great. Well, I enjoyed listening to your talk about China. I used to live over there.
Really? Where?
Yeah. I lived in Beijing.
Yeah.
But I was all over the country. I was in the south and in the north, and I've seen where they've picked up American factories, put them on big ships, and shipped them over to China, and then, you know, paid the people, you know, 15 renminbi an hour to sit and work.
Yeah, which isn't much.
No, it's very little, and they live in canteens. They work them 18 hours a day. If they complain or do anything, they lose their jobs, and then they have no way of getting home because they don't have enough money to even get on the buses and go home.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what's happened over here with the powers that be allowing everyone to go over there and dump off all of our workers is incredible.
If either party was serious about saving American jobs, they would have passed legislation that wouldn't have permitted a single one of them to leave. I wonder what the Republicans or Democrats would think about that. Certainly the Republicans, they would say, oh, it's their right to go where they want, because they would just envision, as what's happened, this would diminish the power of the labor unions here in the United States, and then they would see, yeah, and then because they're really big supporters of the Democratic Party, because, I mean, that's all they ever think about it. I mean, you know, the Democrats are too close to the corporations, too, I mean, without a doubt.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to take them 6 years just to stop the juggernaut of China from running, because we sat and gave them so many jobs.
Sure.
And, you know, the ironic thing is, as soon as the Chinese, their standard of living goes up and the prices go up in China, then these same companies, of course, they have no loyalty. Then they'll go into a banana republic, which is why they signed CAFTA into law.
Which is the Central American Free Trade Act.
They'll pay off the little government junta over there, and then they'll pick up that factory, and then they'll take it over there and do the same thing.
That's why there actually should be an international minimum wage. That the idea is that we take it for granted that there's wealthy countries like ours, and then there's poor countries, without understanding what the very, very direct relationship is. The reason that we have, I forgot the average salary or something of people in the United States is like $42,000, or family income, I think, is $42,000, and people in other countries are, you know, $200,000, $400,000, they're connected. I mean, and what people hear, I mean, why people find it hard to support concepts of economic and social justice is they think, wait a minute, man, if this whole thing gets leveled, it's not like they're all just going to come up to my level. The fear is that we are all going to go down a lot closer to their level. But there's enough wealth in this country. I mean, the billionaires in this world are sitting on trillions and trillions of dollars of wealth. If they gave up half of it, probably, they could end poverty, but they have no intention of doing it. They just store it like some, you know, Scrooge McDuck or something like that.
I've never heard that one before. That's pretty good.
I have one more question.
Sure.
An interesting thought that I heard was, instead of giving all of that money that we did in the bailout to those banks, is it true that we could have given every American $140,000?
And if so,
or let's just imagine everyone got that money instead of those large banks. Wouldn't that have improved the general economy of this country than giving it to those banks who just took that money and socked it away and are not even releasing it?
Yeah, and still have these cash reserves. Well, and also the non-financial sector is sitting on, what did we learn last week, like $2 trillion or something like that. But no, it's nowhere near that. If you, even if you took like, what was it, what was the total bailout? $700 billion or something? I don't think. Come on, I can't do the math on it, but I don't think it comes out.
How does the Republican Party blame Obama for spending that money when he was forced to it in his first day in office? I don't understand.
Well, the bailouts were a Bush program, to be sure. But, you know, there is some truth in what they say, unfortunately. When you have this, you know, a system based on these enormous institutions, I mean, to let them collapse, they could have very well, if they hadn't been bailed out, very well have taken the entire system down with it. I mean, what should have been put in place, though, was these companies should have been split up. There should have obviously been no, you know, all of these CEOs should have been working for about $100,000 a year. And now that they've essentially what we are more of stockholders than they're letting on. I mean, they're saying, oh, we're going to pay back the bailout. But the only reason they're even existing is because we, the taxpayers, bailed them out. So we ought to be getting a big portion of what their, you know, what their profits are for the, I don't know how long. I mean, you know, they could have gone the way of Bear Stearns and what was the other one that went under, the big financial concern? Yeah.
Anyway. Lehman?
Lehman Brothers.
Yeah.
Wasn't it Ford who said, you know, I'm going to build all these factories and the first thing I'm going to do is give everyone a good wage so that they can all buy my products and we can make lots of money?
That was part of it. Also, people did not like the production line. I mean, they couldn't get used to it. In fact, that, in a way, reminded me of another comment that I wanted to. I mean, it wasn't even so much that he wanted to make consumers of everybody. I mean, Henry Ford the First was a horrible man.
He was buddies with Hitler. Hitler had a picture of him in his bunker, right?
In the last days, yeah. He said, Hitler says that Ford's financial contribution to the Nazi Party in the 20s saved the party from going out of existence.
And then there's that.
But the main thing was that people were used to doing production in a craft manner, so that they would build. They were coachmakers essentially. So the couple of them, they would work on a chassis, and then it would be carried over to another section where other guys would, wheel makers or something, and they couldn't turn out the production. So the modern production line, whereas the machine commanded the man, was just more than these people could deal with, and were quitting at an enormous rate. So they essentially recruited a whole new working class. And this again was from a ruined peasantry or ruined small farmers in the South of the United States, many who came up in different periods. And that's what happened. That's what happens, as you saw in China, and what happens in Mexico. This, when a country is pre-industrial, and most of its people are our agricultural workers, and when modern industry moves in, the very frequently the agricultural sector is ruined, and they stream into the cities. They make this pool of cheap labor. It's all, you know, this huge racket.
It gets so big that and it's capable of basically unseating all the workers. You've got all these people who are never going to get these jobs back because, hey, let's admit it, we can make an entire auto factory run by having it all completely automated, and you've got 20 guys that can fix the robots.
Well, Grace Lee Boggs, who, talk about philosophers, is an incredible social philosopher, 95 years old, lives here in Detroit. She says, I mean, whereas I was talking earlier about Bob King and the UAW and the market, March on August 28th. They're talking about rebuilding America by enacting industrial trade and trade policies that will create jobs. And she says we might be past a time of jobs for great numbers of people, and that we ought to be thinking about work. What do we need to reproduce our communities? But then maybe that's another discussion. All right, Paul, thank you very much. Appreciate it. And, hey, we've got some open lines. 313-298-WRIF.
And, Peter, I got an email.
Okay.
From listener Rick. He said he's game for a squirt gun party at Arts, Beats, and Eats.
There you go.
I'll let you take a super soaker. But that is it.
All right. I'm asking everybody to bring their squirt guns. And if you see the guy with the big Glock on his hip, squirt him.
It's not you. No, don't encourage that either. Right. It's terrible, Peter.
Here's Maurice in Detroit. Maurice, how you doing? You're on the air. Hey, Maurice.
I'm doing okay, Peter. Jolene.
Hey, Maurice.
Hi, Jolene. So I was just listening to you a few minutes ago talking about China's and the defense budget.
Yeah.
7% increase.
Yeah.
Don't you think there might be an increase because things cost more now?
Because things cost more? Well, that could be. Hey, Maurice, what cab company do you drive for?
I don't want to talk about them.
Okay. I was just curious.
I just a little cab come out. I don't even want to mention I work for him, man. That's how bad it is.
Yeah.
Oh God.
All right, Maurice. Yeah. So he's talking about they made the Chinese military maybe just trying to keep up with inflation. All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF. Here's John in Fowlerville. Hey, John. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
The last caller, he said you can make a whole vehicle with nothing but robots. I'm an auto worker.
That's not true.
Truly false.
Yeah, you're right.
There are so many intricate things that we do that are specialized in building a vehicle that there's no way you could build a whole car with just robots.
Remind
right
people.
Right now, with the technology we have right now, down the road, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, well, let's hope not.
Certainly there are a lot. I mean, if you go back 50 years ago, there were certainly a lot more people in the plants doing actual labor.
Right. I work in Dearborn Stamping. There used to be 2,000 people in there. Now there's like 365 or something like that.
Well, that kind of makes his point. I mean, you can't do it 100% automated, of course. But,
right, right.
But they're looking for ways.
Well, yeah. I agree, but right now there's no way it's going to happen. In the future, maybe, but it's going to take a long time for that to happen.
I hope so.
Hey, John, are you a UAW member?
Yes.
Yeah, and do you know about this march in Detroit on August 28th that Bob King, your president, has put together?
You know what? Local 600 at Dearborn Stamping doesn't tell us anything because they're so weak and they let the company rule everything that we do.
That's amazing.
Well, we're telling you.
Yeah.
Next.
Oh, I know you. That's why I just heard it.
Come on out. Saturday. This coming Saturday, right?
Yeah. I know. That's the first I heard of it was on the show.
10:30. And where is it, Peter?
It's actually at the UAW Ford National Program Center on right at the foot of Woodward.
Right, downtown.
Yeah, downtown. The old Veterans Memorial Building. Yeah, there'll be thousands.
I know about that. That was the first I heard of it. Now the floor that heard about it on
wow.
the show.
To yeah. be big, come and march with us.
There'll be thousands of people there. Come on
what
down.
Is it again?
Saturday, August 28th.
This coming Saturday.
10:30.
We're going to be working. I got to work that
Ooh.
Day.
Ooh.
Well, you know what?
Tell folks.
Tell folks that I'm glad you're working.
<All right.
laughs> Well, I'm glad I'm working too, but you know, I'm just so disappointed in the local levels of the UAW.
Yeah.
Because we don't hear anything what's going on.
Well, maybe complain or something.
That's not doing good. Well, Bob King says he's going to turn things around.
Call Bob.
No, we'll see. All right, John, thank you very much. And at 1 a.m., I'll have an interview with Bob King talking about this march and all the details. Also, all the details are at my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. And this isn't just for union people. This is for everybody that wants to be part of fixing what's wrong in this country.
Yeah, I'm not in a union. I wish I were.
All right. Here's David in Detroit. David, hi. It's Peter and Jolene. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF.
Oh, good morning.
Hi.
My first time calling, and I have to say it's my first weekend off, so I've never really had a chance to call on the show, but I've heard a lot about it and a lot of the conversation that you folks engage in. So I'm happy to participate and hopefully more in the future.
Sure. We're glad to have you, and congratulations on having a night off, a weekend off.
Yeah, for 10 years.
My gosh.
So anyway, but you know, I've heard some of the conversations in past shows, and I understand the concerns, and I hear them from both sides of the aisle. And I think something that needs to get more talk or more conversation, more dialogue going, is that we talk about all these issues and we treat them as if they are the issues. And if you understand central banking and the monetary system, and how it ties into all of these issues, you find that these issues that we discuss on a daily basis or on the talk shows are really just symptoms of a greater cancer, and not just this country, but any country that has resorted to using money by decree or fiat currency, as we are in this country right now.
Yeah, you know what? All modern economies do, but I mean, I think that world capitalism is just riding on a world of illusion. So in that sense, I agree with you. But they haven't figured out how do you have just this massive exchange of commodities without all this fake money and fake wealth?
Well, the way you do it is through production, using production as your wealth. And I don't care if you use beans or bullets or whatever. But the point is it needs to be something tangible. And it needs to be something that's based on the sweat of man's brow in his physical human exertion.
Well, what do you mean?
In other words, if we are producing and we are saving with what we produce, trading with what we produce, or barter, or as close to it, and paying our apportioned taxes with what we produce, then we, the people, direct the policy of government. But if they are allowed to print it out of thin air and not work for it, issue it to the people, force them to use it, and force them to pay whatever they owe to the state or the government with it, then they control the people and they control the policies of government. Well, they become their own lobbyists.
I mean, there have been central banks in every capitalist country since the early 19th century. When have the people ever controlled monetary policy? I mean, I don't mean, maybe that's a bad way to say it, David, because there's a lot of things that I'd like to see happen that have never happened before as well. But I don't know. I think, we live, the economy looks always like a house of cards, and every once in a while, sections of it collapse or whole sections of it collapse. But it seems to drag its sorry ass along, doesn't it?
Would you be surprised to know that this is the third time in just our nation's short history that we've resorted to money by decree? And both other times before, it ended in collapse and we had to go back to reality. We had to go back to the barter, be it gold, silver, or what have you.
I hope you're not talking about that we should be on some gold standard.
Are we getting back on this gold thing again?
Because, I mean, there's not enough gold in the world to back what's needed for international, certainly not even for international trade, let alone international finance. And it's not even paper money anymore. I mean, that's some like 20th century or 18th century concept. Now it's all this cyber wealth. I mean, somebody that's worth $45 billion, say like Bill Gates, I mean, if he said to his people, hey, I want my money, bring it over to my 12,000 square foot house, which he has, they couldn't do it, right? It ain't there. It's not
right here. There's enough gold in one cup to supply the entire world's economy. I can prove it. Because
You know what? Speaking of gold.
That was gold.
I've got to do some commercials. Email me. Let's start off with that. This is getting a
little.
Have a little
conversation now. Yeah. Call TalkYes at yahoo.com.
All right.
He answers them.
Welcome to the show, David.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe-clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187. If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronix Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronix Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronix Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you don't have coverage, listen to this. AccuQuote can help save you up to 70% on a term life policy that's right for you. Pick up the phone and call AccuQuote at 800-654-2075. AccuQuote has helped hundreds of thousands of people save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how. AccuQuote monitors hundreds of top-rated life insurance products so you can get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. Rates for women are even lower. A short 5-minute call is all it takes. Call AccuQuote for a free life insurance quote at 800-654-2075. Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Find out how much you can save on life insurance. Call AccuQuote for your free quote. 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. Rick writes into Call Talk Yes at, what is it? Calltalkyes at yahoo.com.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, how could I forget? And I was talking about a squirt gun party at the Art Beats and Eats. Oh, you did?
He's in. He wants to have a squirt.
Oh, I'm game.
He's game.
But I was thinking, do they still have flash mobs? You know what those are?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Most of the runs around here are from that person we know who's in radio, does morning radio, Christian radio.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, but you do flash. All right. But there's also...
I think this might be that... organization. There's one at Arts, Beats, and Eats?
No, I'm thinking about having a flash mob for a squirt gun.
Oh, a squirt gun flash mob.
Squirt gun
flash
mob.
Listen, Peter, as a former cheerleader, dancer, all kinds of things, I could choreograph this for you.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. So, who's with it? Write us in. Call Talk Yesterday. Actually, don't write me at all. Do the flash mob thing. I don't even know how the hell they work. Here is Ted in Sterling Heights. Ted, hi, it's Peter and Jolene. Welcome to the broadcast.
How you doing, Mr. Werby?
Okay, we're good. We're good.
Okay.
Welcome.
My question is basically, Detroit, you have three casinos, and basically with that tax that they pay for Detroit and that money, where is that money actually going for, and where is it actually going to where the public safety, they're supposed to, you know, lay off the police officers, firefighters, and paramedics, and you would think with all that money with the three casinos that they have down there, and supposedly they're supposed to build another one. I mean, that's the rumor I've been hearing around college above, you know, Cobo Hall.
Where's that money going to?
You know, that actually, Ted, is an excellent question, because I also wonder, the lottery is supposed to fund the schools. Why are schools in such miserable shape in so many districts? I don't know. I mean, and I don't know whether the casino tax goes right to, all of it goes to the city of Detroit, or whether it goes, whether it goes to the state. In any event, I mean, it couldn't be, could it? It being misused. The only reason, I mean, that may sound naive, but there is so much investigative reportage going on that if it was being like misdirected by the tens of millions, which must be coming out of the losses that the people, you know, wind up paying the casinos, people would know about it. I don't know why that the lottery is not enough to have us, every school in Michigan, be the greatest rather than them just being in such miserable shape. It's a good question.
And closing.
All right, but thank you for posing that. Maybe someone else can give us the answer. Here is Terry in Port Huron. Hi, Terry. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about the RCC. We had the gentleman who's going to run that, we had him here for our Mackinac race, and I just wanted to warn the people there, the locals, our locals suffered quite a bit of a loss because he brought in his own vendors, and then he came into our town and tried to tell us that we couldn't do what we normally do, and for the only reason that he came into town is because our city council hired him thinking that we needed more publicity.
Hold on. We're talking about the Mackinac, the Port Huron, the Mackinac race, and who's the he here? Who's the,
Jonathan Witt, and he's the gentleman that's in charge of the Arts, Peace, and
East. Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh,
okay. Yeah. You sound kind of muffled, so maybe try to adjust your phone.
I'm in the phone, or in the car.
There, you're better.
From the airport.
Okay. You're better now. Okay.
So, I mean, obviously it's a profit-making venture for somebody like that. I mean, there's nobody makes any bones about it.
Right. And what happened to us was he tried to tell a lot of the local little businesses that they couldn't continue to do what they normally do. And I've lived here all my life. And a lot of these little businesses, they survive on that weekend and Christmas. And he really took a big crunch on our local businesses because he brought in his own beer cell, and he was telling people that they had, if they were going to sell water, they had to buy it from him. And they need to read the contract very closely because it's worded really tricky. And, you know, I just think that they need to be warned up ahead of time.
Well, I would hope that the city of Royal Oak, had some good legal advice on it. I mean, one of the things the contract said between the city of Royal Oak and the Beats and Eats Festival was there couldn't be any guns there. And they were going to allow it to be prohibited. And then these gun nuts who want to walk around in a family event with a gun on their waist, freak some people out. At least, that they said, wow, under Michigan law, that they can't do it. So, Mr. Macho is a macho man is going to be there with his guns and getting all the attention. Everybody, look, there he is. Like that. All right, thank you very much, Terry. Forewarned is forearmed, although I don't want to talk about arms in this case, do we? Here's Donald in Roseville. Donald, hi, it's Peter and Jolene on WRIF. Thanks for joining us. Hi, you're on the air. Donald.
I'm on the air right now.
You right now.
Go
you are
for
on
it.
The air.
You are live.
Okay. How about the NAFTA?
Well, that ought to go.
Free trade agreement.
Yeah, that ought to go, huh?
That took away all of our industry, didn't it not?
Well, it was.
It hurt it.
It would hurt it,
horribly,
that's for sure.
Yeah.
Hurt us, hurt the Mexicans, hurt the Canadians. All the companies got rich, though.
No, but it took away all of our industry. It took our manufacturing away.
What industry are you in?
I work for a beverage distribution company.
Oh, okay. I was just curious if you were talking about something specific.
No,
you're saying in general. Okay.
Yeah, I'm making good money. And I'm working.
Good for you.
I got a lot of friends and relatives and family that don't work.
Yep.
Well, let me.
It's a sad trend right now.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, Donald, that if you listen to my guest at 1 a.m., Bob King, the president of the UAW, I asked him a couple of times on that. He's, because one of the things at this march on Saturday at 10:30 a.m., it says, Rebuild America by enacting industrial and trade policies that create jobs. That what will save jobs here are tariffs. It does not allow goods from other countries to come in without putting an extra little tax on it, a tariff. And the free trade is supposed to stop that. So that's why we get all this stuff from Bangladesh and Mexico and all that that's made almost with slave labor. I mean, as close as you can get to it without actually being slavery. So that's what's really needed. We've got to erect some tariff barriers again and get rid of all this stupid free trade stuff. I agree, including NAFTA.
And I think that's going to be a tough thing to do.
Yeah, when it passed, it was passed by the majority of Republicans. The Republicans all voted for it, a few Democrats, and so it was essentially a Republican bill, and then speaking of Bill signed it, which was awful. Bill Clinton.
Right.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Speaking of Bill.
Yeah. Here's Jeff in Ortonville. Jeff, hi. It's Peter and Jolene. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey. I was wondering why we haven't brought the death penalty back here in Michigan.
Bad.
Oh.
We never had it, ever.
That's a really good point.
I'm wondering why it ain't here.
Why in the world did we have it? It's costly. It's barbaric all the time. You see these people that were on death row, and it turned out they didn't do it. Nobody wants it.
It costs way, way, way more money to kill someone via the death penalty than it does to keep their asses locked up for the rest of their lives.
The other thing, it doesn't do anything to dissuade people from crimes.
True.
Like
that is a fact. And through studies,
yeah, in
that's
fact,
been proven.
I think, Jeff, we ought to be proud that Michigan has never had the death penalty in the entire time since 1837 that it's been a state. Let's have some pride in that. All right, thank you. Let's see here. Oh, here's one of the answers to our question. Here's Tom in Detroit. Tom, hi, you're on the air.
Tom, Peter, how are you?
Good. What's up?
Hey, just real quick, I worked on a Motor City casino.
Uh-huh.
And I did stop in the gaming office once. And I just was kind of curious about where the taxes were going as far as what the city was paying out or what they were getting and the state was getting. It came out to about 19%. 9% was going to the state of Michigan, and 10% of the revenues were going to the city of Detroit. And it was in the millions of dollars, quite a bit.
Well, it is. I wonder, though, you know,
it's just not enough. Huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, that must be the revenue, the general tax fund must be so low. Think about property taxes and how little they must bring in. That's still not enough to keep Detroit out of debt. All right, it sounds like you're playing the canasta. What are those things called?
I do that. Are they canastas?
Not canastas. It's a card game. All right. Thank you, Tom. Come on. What are those?
I know what they are. I had them when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah. All right. Who knows what those are? Those things that the flamenco
dancers use. Yes.
Canasta is a card game, I think.
Yeah, I've never played it.
Here's Bill in Trenton. Bill, hi, it's Peter and Jolene. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. What's up?
Hey, not much. Well, nice to hear from you guys. It's been a while since I've listened. I just want to kind of make a comment on the layoffs and everything going on here in Detroit and in the Michigan area. And all the concessions that everybody's taken, and you know, these corporations that are on the comeback, and you know, and what used to take like four guys to do one job is like, you know, I'm one back now.
Sure.
And you know, what's your comment on that, you think?
I think that's
going to happen.
Well, that's Bill, that's an excellent point, because one of the things, I don't mean to keep endlessly quoting Bob King, but one of the things that he has said publicly in the concessions that the United Auto Workers made to the auto companies, he said now that they're starting to get back on their feet, hello, that ought to be reversed. And if profits are starting to flow into the company, that ought to be shared. Because that was one thing that happened in the 1950s, and that's how the unions led the way for industrial workers to enter the middle class, to live a decent life and to not have to worry about, to have job security and all that. And as productivity rose, then so would worker wages and other compensation. But now it's this frontal attack on working class and middle class standards and the unions themselves that were the bulwark of it all. Because eventually what the big corporations, many of them, not all of them, but many of them hope to do is just kick the struts out from under any sort of guaranteed wage structure. And so you have the kind of situation where in some UAW plants our friend, the past president of the UAW, Ron Gettelfinger, who fired Jalene and me.
He fired the whole network.
He did. We had it.
It wasn't a personal thing.
Right, right.
He loved our politics.
You know, you're laughing. He hated us.
He did?
Yeah.
I thought he loved us.
No, but what was...
How could you not love us?
You totally made me forget my point.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I have that effect on you sometimes, Peter Werby.
All right, Bill. Thank you very much. Let's see. Here is Tony. Tony's in Waterford. Go ahead, Tony. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter and Jalene. How are you guys?
We're good.
Tony, great. Thanks. How are you?
Good. I'm well. I just turned on your show late tonight, so I don't know if you had been talking about it earlier, but when I heard you talking about jobs and fair trade versus free trade, I wondered what your position is on who you're supporting for governor.
Well, it's certainly not the nerd, the self-proclaimed nerd. What
Who's
is it?
The nerd?
Rick Snyder. That's
oh,
what he,
yeah. Yeah. I had someone tell me they were kind of hot on that. I'm like, no.
The stupidest ads I've ever seen, but how he won the Republican nomination is beyond me. Verge Venero, the Democratic candidate, who's the mayor of Lansing.
He's a very popular guy in Lansing.
Too. Yeah, but I think he's down in the polls, mainly because, what always happens when things don't go well and there's a Democrat in office, people say, oh, this is terrible, we got to get rid of Jennifer Granholm, so we got to vote for a Republican, and then things go south with a Republican, they go, this is terrible, those Republicans, we got to elect a Democrat. Although Verge Venero is a powerful speaker. I mean, what was he was getting contributions from the guy that owns the Ambassador Bridge, isn't it?
Oh, he was? I didn't miss that.
That didn't sit well with a lot of people, but, I mean...
He's a politician!
Yeah, he certainly he has this populist rhetoric. If it's more than rhetoric, that's good. But you know what? Jennifer Granholm was a very effective administrator, but there was not a thing that she could do. I mean, partly hobbled by a Republican legislature, but beyond that, even if everybody was on board, when you have a state where the revenues are disappearing, I don't know what in the hell anybody could have done, Democrat, Republican, Socialist, or Green, eh? What do you think about him, Tony?
Well, I think that Verge Venero is an amazing guy. If you've ever heard him speak, which I just heard you say that you have, I mean, the guy is head and shoulders above Rick Snyder in every category.
Well, I'd like to see a debate. He will wipe the floor with the nerd.
Exactly.
The nerd.
Well, that's what he calls himself.
He calls himself that? I love most nerds.
And Verge Venero wants 8 debates, and Rick Snyder wants a maximum of 3. And from what I understand, he wants them to all take place before the absentee ballots are due, because he knows that if they take place after the absentee ballots are due, then people who were tending to vote for him won't vote for him, and they'll vote instead for Verge Venero.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, okay, we shall see. That'll be developing. We'll probably talk about it more. Stephanie, I always never read the screen. It's Castanets.
Castanet, thank you. Thank you, Stephanie.
Click, 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 click. Here's Joe in Waterford. Hi, Joe. You're on the air. Joe.
Yo, Joe.
Strike 3. You're out.
He's distracted.
So we're almost done. We got a minute or two left. I think we may be getting Ryan from Roseville up, we're going to be off Labor Day.
Yes.
We're going to be off the Labor Day deal.
We'll be back.
What, you want to end the show?
Are we ending? We have another call.
We got to do. Yeah. Here's Ryan in Roseville. Go ahead, Ryan. You're on the air. Hey, Ryan. Hey, Ryan.
Yes.
Yeah, you're on
there
the air,
you
man.
Are.
Go ahead.
Yes.
what's going on?
You're a talk show and you.
Yeah, and you're our last caller, so go ahead.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, I'm sorry. NAFTA, though, I mean... We got...
Good or bad, what?
All right. Yeah.
Really got screwed.
Yep.
There you go.
Yeah.
You know what? Yes. Let's leave it at that. And here's the deal.
Screwed big time.
Here's the deal, Ryan. We have gotten screwed. We're being screwed. We're being looted. And we've got to begin to fight back. So how do we fight back? How does Peter and Jolene, how does Ryan, by ourselves, but all we can do is complain, either to our friends, we can just mumble to ourselves. Unless we begin in a concerted effort, it ain't going to happen. And coming up next, take a listen to this, in about 5 or 6 minutes, is the new president of the UAW, Bob King, and he and others have launched a resistance march, essentially, saying we are now going to do something much, much different, and we are going to create a social movement again to bring about economic and social justice. It's going to happen on Saturday, this coming Saturday, 10:30 a.m., downtown Detroit, at the foot of Woodward. Be there. All right. Thank you so much, Jolene Jordan.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Stephanie. And we will be back next week. Oh, no. We're not going to be back next week, right? This is the weekend we're off. No, wait a minute. It's Labor Day. We're off. So we'll be back next week. Stay tuned for the interview.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're 2 payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282. 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay,
but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
I'd like a nice skim, no-whiff latte.
Hey, you're the Red Defender, right?
Yes.
I saw you in the paper. You saved a runaway train.
That's right.
So shouldn't you be out saving something?
I already stopped a bank heist this morning.
Evil doesn't take a break.
Can I sit down for a second?
Hey, dial back the caffeine, man.
Saving the world isn't easy. Saving a life is. One pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Go to bloodsaves.com. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice,
what if something happens? Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of an emergency.
Mom, if you're not home, should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
I know, being a college freshman is supposed to be tough, but let me tell you about my schedule this semester. All 18 credits. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I have American Lit at 8:05 a.m. And then I only have 15 minutes to get to my 9:15 Ethics and Value Theory class all the way across campus. Then in the afternoon, Calculus 1. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I have 2 lectures that go through lunch. Sociology of Families, then Intro to Microbiology. Pre-med. And finally, I have a double lab that ends around 9 p.m. Anyway, I just wanted to say... thank you.
If a kid will do whatever it takes to get through college, what will you do to send her there? Please support the United Negro College Fund and call 1-800-332-UNCF, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
101 WRIF.
NWRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. It's a pleasure to introduce Bob King. Bob King is the recently elected president of the United Auto Workers, the UAW. And as you've probably heard me say several times on this broadcast before, the UAW and other organizations are sponsoring a Jobs, Justice, and Peace March to commemorate Dr. Martin Luther King's 1963 visit to Detroit. The implications of all this, I think, are extraordinary, and we want to get Bob King's thoughts on it all. Bob King, welcome to the broadcast and congratulations on your election to the presidency of the UAW.
Oh, thanks very much, Peter. Thanks for inviting me today and thanks for the congratulations.
And I guess I should, for full disclosure, say both that I'm a union member and also I was formerly an employee of the UAW, but that literally has nothing to do with it. We're at a juncture point, I would say, in American history. And to begin with, tell us about this march that's going to occur on Saturday, August 28th.
Well, I'm really excited. I've long been a student, I guess, of Dr. Martin Luther King and his beliefs in equality and justice and focus on peace and jobs is exactly what we need today. So we have formed a coalition with the Rainbow Coalition and Reverend Jesse Jackson to do a march to commemorate the memory of Dr. King and his activism, but most importantly, to re-energize and reactivate people who care about other people, people who care about justice and fairness in society. I feel like the people of caring, people of conscience have been too quiet, and we've got a lot of right-wing forces and forces of the division and hatred out there raising a lot of noise, and those of us who care about social justice should be raising a whole lot more noise in calling for government action that's really going to put people back to work, government action that's going to spend money in schools and health care and pensions, not on wars. Needless war. So I'm very excited that about mobilizing and energizing our membership and the general public around these really important issues.
And people can go to the UAW site at uaw.org or also to Jesse Jackson's site, rainbowpush.org. Also, all the details of this march we're talking about on Saturday, August 28th, people are going to assemble in downtown Detroit at the, actually, it's the old Veterans Building, right?
But yeah, that's correct. Now the UAW Ford National Program Center.
At 10:30 a.m. And my hope for it all, and I suspect, Bob King, yours as well, that this could have the same signal event that the Detroit March in 1963 had led by your predecessor, Walter Reuther, as president of the UAW, and Dr. Martin Luther King. Can you tell us a little about that? I was actually really struck with the speech that Dr. King gave as well.
Well, let's start with the speech. The speech actually was the first time he gave the I Have a Dream speech, and it was, you know, like many of us who do a lot of public speaking, he was kind of testing his message and filling it out, and he gave it here first. And the other thing that I'm very proud of is the role that the UAW under Walter Reuther played in supporting Dr. King. We gave him an office here to build for the march in Washington. There's a similarity this year, too, because we're building for an October 2nd march in Washington for One Nation and Jobs and Peace and Justice. So a lot of historical similarities and symbolism, but most importantly, and hopefully that brings more people out, but most importantly, we got to reach out to the young people and people who care about a good society and fairness for all in society, and get them out marching and walking and rallying. We've got to re-engage people and re-excite people.
Well, on that day in 1963, I believe, it was in June, right?
Right, yes.
That there was 125,000 people there. Are we going to approach anything like that?
You know, that's not my expectation. You know, you never know. There had been a lot of marches and a lot of activity and rallies, and people were engaged to a much higher level by the point that Dr. King came to Detroit. We're more on the beginning and foundation building. We need the same kind of movement. I mean, really, in my view of the world, there can't be an effective labor movement, can't be effective unions if they're not part of a social justice movement. And for too long, we were focused on our own contracts and our own issues. We need to be re-engaged with other progressives who, and rebuild a really activist social justice movement. I mean, the amount of unfairness in our society blows me away. Last night I was talking to a friend whose dad had worked his whole life. And now he's working, after retiring and having to go back to work, he was working for Lowe's, and he's got cancer, and he's going to lose his home. It's just people who work hard, who live by the rules, should be protected. That was a social compact that we've lost, that only a social justice movement is going to win back.
Now, let me introduce you again. My guest on the Peter Werbe Show, Bob King, the president of the UAW. We're talking about a march in Detroit. It's going to occur on Saturday, August 28th. It's not just for union members. It's for everybody that cares about jobs, justice, and peace, which is the title of the march. It's done in cooperation, in conjunction with rainbowpush.org. That's the website of Reverend Jesse Jackson's organization. Also, there's lots of other groups that have signed on and supporting it, and at least one member of Congress, Representative John Conyers. So it's getting pretty wide support.
Yeah, it is. And I think Congressman Dingell has signed on. I think a number of political leaders are now. It's a social justice march that the UAW is supporting. So it's really about calling on the general public to be out and to be raising their voice that we want fair pensions, we want fair health care, we want good schools. We don't want to spend all the money that we're spending giving tax breaks to the wealthiest people in society, denying unemployment extensions to good, hard-working people, and at the same time wanting to extend tax breaks, really greedy tax breaks, to the wealthiest in society who need them the least of anybody, or spending money, billions of dollars, in Afghanistan and Iraq when we can't even keep our schools open and keep them modernized. It's just there's a lot wrong in our society concerning justice for the public that we need to correct. And only if we get active and involved and mobilized can we win that justice.
You know, once, quite a while ago, I was debating the editor of the editorial page of the Detroit Free Press out at Cranbrook, where we'd both been invited. And I told him that the Detroit Free Press and the Detroit News had been on the wrong side of every social question throughout the years. And certainly that when the important years of union organizing during the 1930s and when the UAW was established, they opposed the union movement. But their coverage, both of this march and even and they referred to you, Bob King, an activist giving fiery speeches. Am I reading it wrong, or they seem to be fairly sympathetic?
I'm pleasantly surprised is the right word, but I really appreciate that. I think that the press has given us a fair shot, and they're trying to portray things fairly. Hopefully they see, too, the amount of injustice and realize there's got to be a counter movement to get fairness back in the American society. The middle class is dying, it's such a shame. People have a great work ethic. They play by the rules, and yet the system is driving them down. And the middle class is the foundation of America. And so we've got to get policies that allow the middle class to come back to life and give people. Anybody who works hard should have decent wages, decent pension, decent health care, be able to send their kids to school. That's the social compact, and that's what we have to reestablish.
You know, maybe it might make some sense, and I think so, because there's a lot of myths about unions and the effect that unions have had on our economy here, even to the point where some people say that that unions have created the economic mess that we find ourselves in. Speak to that a little. I mean, the idea is, of course, that unions with their demands for huge wage packages and benefits, that they drove the car companies out. You've heard it all. What do you say, Bob King?
Well, I would say that if you look back to when the United States of America was the strongest, it was the strongest when unions were the strongest, when workers were making decent wages so they could go out and buy consumer goods. The more we have been driven by Republican policies really to create this great divide between the wealthiest and the middle class, and people are pushing down into poverty, this country is becoming weaker and weaker. Unions built the American class, the middle class, I'm sorry, the unions built the middle class in America, If we want a strong America again, we need strong unions. We said in Poland, we said in South Africa, we said in China, all throughout the world, we say, both Republicans and Democrats say, that a strong part of a democracy is a strong labor movement, but then Republicans come back home and try to destroy the labor movement. They say it's an important part of democracy everywhere else in the world, but the United States, they try to destroy it just out of greed, so that the wealthy can make more and more and working people make less and less. It doesn't make sense.
Well, can we, and I say this as a union member, a longtime union member and union activist in my union, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, when you have globalized labor, and we don't do this in broadcasters yet, but in industrial labor, we're competing on this global market, and so somebody in Detroit or somebody in Indianapolis, it's a UAW member, that every employer knows there's somebody out there doing the identical job from anywhere from $3 an hour to a dollar an hour. How do we maintain that? I mean, that's maybe you could even speak to that, because that's one of the points in this Jobs, Justice, and Peace. Rebuild America by enacting industrial and trade policies that create jobs. How do we compete when we want to live a middle-class life and the companies want to force us down to the bottom?
Well, I think we just got to challenge the American public. I think the American public overwhelmingly wants people in working class to be in the middle class. They want them to have fair wages and benefits. We have to ask for their help to support policies, industrial policies, trade policies that keep jobs in this country, that keep workers at a good rate of pay. You know, for all the people who said that UAW destroyed the auto industry, focusing the point you're making earlier, I hope they look at Ford and General Motors and Chrysler today and see the tremendous comeback of these companies and realize it was the labor movement, it was the UAW and UAW members who took the largest sacrifices to turn these companies around, changed all of our internal work practices in the plants, and are making the best quality products. So it's unions working together with management who have turned these companies around and are producing products that are making a good profit at good wages and benefits. So you can do it. Germany's probably done the best job of it. Good wages, good productivity, good profits for the corporations. In some people's minds, you can't have profits and decent wages. That's wrong. You can have both and build a stronger America if you do have both.
You listen to Peter Werby's show. My guest, Bob King, the president of the UAW. And on Saturday, August 28th, there's going to be a Jobs, Justice, and Peace March, which will commemorate Dr. Martin Luther King's 1963 visit and march in Detroit. And as I said, let me give you the details, too, that marchers will gather at 10:30 a.m. at the UAW Ford National Program Center. That's pretty much at the foot of Woodward. There's a great labor statue there. Most people don't realize that's what that almost completed circle is. It's the old Veterans Building. 10:30 a.m. This isn't just for union members. It's for everybody that cares about what's happening to the middle class and the working class and the poor. But the demands are rebuild America by enacting industrial and trade policies that create jobs, encourage manufacturing in America, and put workers first. How does that tie into things like NAFTA and the WTO and World Bank, all that?
Well, those are instruments to the race to the bottom. If you don't have strong unions and you don't build up global solidarity amongst workers, workers got to stand together, because individually we don't have any power. When we stand together, we can win good wages and benefits and pensions and job security. So we have to build a movement that really does believe in every human being has a right to a decent standard of living, and there's plenty of resources and wealth in the world that workers can have decent wages and benefits, companies can be profitable. Actually, they'll be in many ways more profitable, because if workers around the world are getting decent wages and benefits, that drives more money into consumer goods and makes economies stronger around the world.
Sure. Well, the UAW, is it still the international UAW? Is it still?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, of course, I don't. Maybe a little more than your expectations, Bob King, but we ought to be talking about wage standards that are identical all over the world, so that there is like an international UAW that might have, locals in not only in Mexico, but in China and in Bangladesh and what have you. But that seems pretty far down the line. It's like China and those countries they're like in the 1880s as we were here.
Well, and there are good signs. We've seen in China workers standing up for their rights and winning substantial wage increases. We see workers in Mexico doing it. We see workers in Bangladesh. That has to be the goal. Now, whether it happens in my lifetime or your lifetime, probably not. But if somebody doesn't create that vision and begin working towards it and beginning energizing, people got to have hope. In a way, I think you can have a world based on decent a standard of living for everybody in a strong global middle class. And that's what I hope I can be part of, along with other people who care about social justice. And really, to me, the Christian principle is about loving your brother and sister. Then you got to fight for them to get fairness in society and fairness in the global society. So I think that's got to be the goal. And I think you can work towards it and be surprised. Nobody thought in the 1930s that you would be able to take workers that were in non-union Ford or non-union GM or Studebaker or the other places who were getting lousy wages and had security guards walking them with them into the bathroom. Nobody thought that in 10 years you could make them globally best paid workers, greatest job security, everything that we won, because workers came together and stood together and fought for one another, and that's what we were able to achieve. So I think it is possible to achieve a lot quicker than most people would think, but it's a matter of doing the right thing, supporting workers everywhere in the world, and working for and building for a just society.
Well, would you call for like an end of NAFTA and our participation in the World Trade Organization, the restructuring of tariffs? Some people have said, hey, look, we got to have protective tariffs or we're going to be drowned with cheaply made, well, we are being drowned by cheaply made products from other countries.
I view myself as an internationalist. I think that there has to be trade, but we want trade on a fair basis. We want trade that takes people out of poverty, not pushes people into poverty. So that means you need labor standards. That means you need environmental standards, so one country doesn't become more competitive by terrible environmental practices where another country that's trying to do the right thing, protect the environment, becomes uncompetitive. So you've got to have standards, and you have to have world trade.
Okay. One of the elements of this march, one of the calls, is for end the ongoing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and redirect the war budget to rebuilding America. And I don't think you never hear this, even in like liberal columnists in the New York Times, of a war budget the United States has, which is in reality, if you count it up properly, it's about $1 trillion a year, and we could cut it probably by 80% and still have the largest military expenditures in the world.
Well, and I think spending that much in a military budget has made the world less stable. And I think if we took that money and directed it to schools and rebuilding the infrastructure and moving to green manufacturing, we would build a much stronger United States and much more stability in the world. The amount we spend on military and weapons of mass destruction, to use somebody else's term, is to me is unconscionable. We should be spending that money to educate our kids. We should be spending that money to give everybody health care. We should be spending that money to turn closed down factories into reopened factories, building wind turbines and hydrogen vehicles and all kinds of things that would help the environment and help society as a whole.
The march on Saturday, August 28th, is also going to call for a moratorium on foreclosures, essentially. Tell us a little about that. That's
well,
important.
Isn't that just basic justice? We bailed out Wall Street with billions of dollars, and now we got good, hard-working American citizens, fought the wars, veterans of wars, protecting this country, that are now having their homes taken away because all these companies shut work down, moved work out of the country, closed facilities down for in the and the run for higher profitability, we need to protect America's workers. We ought to stop foreclosures and put everybody to work who's not working now, rebuilding our schools, rebuilding our bridges, rebuilding our sewage systems, building wind turbines. There's so much good that we could do if we put people back to work. And the government, in times like this, that's what they should be doing. And honestly, that kind of stimulus package would pay for itself.
Sure.
Because people get back to work, they'd be spending money, they'd be paying taxes, they wouldn't be on unemployment, they wouldn't be going to the local hospitals and rising, you know, causing increases in health care costs because they don't have any insurance. It's crazy the way the system is going now.
Well, Bob King, once, you know, I do a phone-in talk show as well as what I did when I worked for the UAW, I hear people say, well, one of two things. Well, the unions were okay for my fill-in-the-blank father or grandfather. And the other, but, you know, I don't know if we need them now. I mean, I think we've really kind of dismissed that one. But also, I always say the largest political party in the United States is the party of resentment. And a lot of that resentment will go towards union members who are sometimes making, I forgot, one of the plants that I was just reading about that you represent is making $29 an hour. So a $9 an hour guy says, you know, screw them. You know, in other words, rather than wanting to emulate that, there's this resentment.
Well, you know what? I accept some of that responsibility because I don't think we have been public enough and strong enough fighting for all workers' wages and benefits to go up. That's what we have to do. When the UAW is seen as an organization fighting for every worker in America, and really every worker globally, there was a lot more support. And that's what I want to. If I can make a difference as a leader, it's energizing and mobilizing our members to fight for social justice for everybody. And when that $9 an hour worker sees that we're out there fighting for national health care for them, so the boss doesn't have to pay it, so it's a society and everybody's in a much bigger pool, which is the most economical way to do it. When they see us fighting for them, they'll support us more. When they say we want to bring them up, we want to raise all boats to bring them up to our level, then they're going to feel better about the UAW and the labor movement in general.
Bob King, we've just got a minute or two left, and we've hardly even mentioned the March on Washington on October 2nd. One nation working together. Is that the UAW's?
It's the NAACP started, a number of progressive groups, and I'm really proud that we've joined in and we're supporting other people working for social justice, and that I think it's going to be a great, exciting march. I'd really encourage people to go there. It will be historical. It will be like the Martin Luther King March when he gave the most famous I Have a Dream speech. It'll be very exciting and so important. You know, we can sit back and we can blame others, or we can say, what can I do to make this a better world? And one of the things everybody can do is march for social justice, march for jobs for everybody, march for enough tax dollars going into education and the infrastructure rather than to wasted wars and wasted lives in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah, one final question, Bob King, and people are really discouraged. People really seem without hope, and yet there's this almost ebullience in your voice about possibilities. Why so hopeful?
I have deep spiritual beliefs, and I believe that everybody in this world is connected, and when we work together for the good of everyone, I have constant hope. And I see people respond. I see people every day that take care of others. Our local, it's so inspiring to see what our local unions do and for local charities and for, building homes for Habitat for America or for orphanages or for schools for the blind. People want to help other people. And so that's what gives me hope. There is basic goodness.
And there is also some self-interest here. I mean, because we are on a race to the bottom, and it is us, we the people, that can turn this all around.
That's right.
Yeah. The website is UAW.org. Also, a lot of information on my website as well, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. The Reverend Jesse Jackson's organization is involved in this. You can go to his site, rainbowpush.org. I'm going to be there, and the famous photograph with Martin Luther King Jr. and Walter Reuther in it. This one we'll see Bob King, president of the UAW, and Reverend Jesse Jackson. I look forward to it all. Bob King, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for doing this.
This is Night Call
on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Join Ann Carlini tomorrow from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Buffalo Wild Wings at I-94 and Huron Street in Ypsilanti. Stop by and register to win an ultimate college life prize pack, including a flat-screen TV, Xbox 360, iPod Touch, and concert tickets, courtesy of Comcast. Visit www.comcastforcollege.com today for exclusive student offers.
Did you see today's Motor City Daily Deal? $85 in spa services for only $29?
Yes. I got my Motor City Daily Deal email first thing this morning. I've already bought mine.
I'm buying mine now and sending it to Jen. We've been thinking about trying the salon. It's like a 65% savings.
Make sure to remind her that Motor City Daily Deal is only available for 24 hours. She has to get it before it's too late.
Absolutely. What do you think tomorrow's Motor City Daily Deal will be?
Maybe that Italian restaurant in Utica that Jen's mentioned. Or what about that bakery in Livonia?
I hope it's that rib place in Commerce. Now, I can't wait to get tomorrow's Motor City Daily Deal email.
Me too.
MotorCityDailyDeal.com. You get an email each day with one incredible deal, saving you as much as 85%. But it's available for only one day. Sign up and get the savings. MotorCityDailyDeal.com. That's MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS that you can't afford to pay? Or are you stuck in a tax payment plan that's getting you nowhere? The IRS is now taking very aggressive actions, such as bank levies and wage garnishments. If you owe the IRS at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debt for less than you owe, remove penalties and interest, and protect you from bank levies and garnishments. As a hardworking American, you do have rights. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Riff.
101 The Riff.
Energy hog to team! Get in that house and waste some energy!
No problem! It's got leaky window and no attic insulation!
This house is under attack by energy hogs. They show up anywhere energy's wasted.
The washer, it's not Energy Star rated.
You have the power to get rid of energy hogs.
Someone's home!
He's got energy-efficient light bulbs!
Go to energyhog.org for fun games and lots of hog-busting tips.
Energyhog.org? That's it! Get out of there!
Wait for me!
Brought to you by the Alliance to Save Energy, the Department of Energy, and the Ad Council.
My name's Rachel, and I'm 10 years old. I like riding my bike, playing soccer, and in 8 years, I'll be an alcoholic. I'll start drinking in middle school, just at parties. My friends will drink, so I will too.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
My parents won't really know what's going on yet. I mean, I'll do okay in school, but when I drink, I'll do some things I don't really want to do. So by the time my parents talk to me about it, alcohol won't be my only problem.
Alcohol affects their judgment and their future. So start talking before they start drinking.
My parents won't believe it could happen to me.
For more information on teens and alcohol, and to learn what you can do, visit the web at stopalcoholabuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Peter Werby here with you. Thank you very much for joining me. I don't think I'm alone when I say I have great concern for our environment. Almost everybody that is not completely crazy is concerned about the state of our environment. There are debates about different aspects of it, like global warming and climate change, but most of us do not want to suck in pollution. Most of us do not want to eat a bunch of chemicals in our food. Most of us want clean, pure water. It doesn't matter where you are in the political spectrum. Everyone agrees to that. But I guess the concern is pretty generalized. It's like most things. We hope that we don't get poisoned. We hope that the people that are in charge of things make the right decisions. But as I've always said, an engaged citizenry is key to democracy and key to getting what we want. And the first thing you have to begin with is information and knowledge. You can't just you can say that kind of general statement, and then the guys in power will say, "Okay, sure, well, don't worry, we'll take care of you." Well, I'm not there, and I don't think many of you are as well. And many people ask me, where do I get my information from? One important source for me about the environment is E Magazine. It's E, the Environmental Magazine. And they're celebrating their 20th anniversary, and they have an incredible issue coming out. And it's the magazine is so attractive, so filled with important, powerful bits of information, or I shouldn't even say bits, I mean huge pieces of information that we need to know. And best of all, it often gives advice how we, the citizens, can move towards the kind of planet we want to live in. Joining me to talk about the 20th anniversary and their just published 20th anniversary issue is Britta Belli. She's the editor, and we reach her in her office in Connecticut. Welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, now 20 years, that's something we hear about all these publications going under. The Environmental Magazine going strong?
Yeah, I mean, it is really remarkable, I think, particularly in this day and age. I mean, since we've been here, have seen green publications come and go in just the last few years. Plenty Magazine, for instance, comes to mind. But there's been several that have folded recently. One of the things that's allowed us to stay afloat has been the fact that we're a nonprofit magazine. We're nonprofit, we're independent, but we do grant writing, that in addition to advertising, as all magazines do. And so it's that combined effort that's helped us survive, really, all these years.
What drives you and the magazine? Well, I mean, that's probably two separate questions. You as an individual to want to edit a magazine like the Environmental Magazine, and the magazine itself. I mean, I guess one is mission statement, one is personal engagement.
Right. For me personally, this is an endless source of interesting information. There's so much out there. I mean, I think the more you research and cover environmental issues, the more you realize just how interconnected everything is, how everything we do really has an impact. So it's very much a learning process and a fascinating learning process at that. And I think for the magazine itself, the magazine's mission has always really been to promote the issues and the causes of the environmental community at large. There's so many of these wonderful groups and doing grassroots, movements across the world, whether it's stopping deforestation, talking about toxins in our food or our water and air, climate change. I mean, so many of these issues out there. And I think much of what we do is really try to capture these issues and bring them to a more general mainstream audience.
Well, you do an excellent job, and it's an extraordinarily attractive magazine as well. Without being, I mean, it's readable. I mean, some of these these modern magazines are going, is this an ad or is this a story? And it's all cockeyed on the page. But the Environmental Magazine is an extraordinary design, extraordinarily designed magazine as well. You know, this is an odd thing to say, but there really shouldn't have to be E Magazine. I mean, the people in charge, both the politicians and the people that lead the corporations that are often the major polluters, they live in the same planet with us. I mean, sometimes it strikes me, why do we even have to have an environmental movement or an environmental consciousness? It should be an avatar, right? We're just all connected, except there's got to be a disconnect somewhere where people would allow what goes on to go on.
I mean, that's certainly true, and I think a lot of people really are living in the short term. I mean, what can I gain now, in my lifetime? And I'm not really going to worry about the long-term effects. When the primary value is really how much can I make, everything else falls away, which is, we just see a lowering of quality standards, and I mean, even just the kind of where we've hit in terms of the culture, in terms of our consumerism, and all the cheap stuff we buy, all the cheap furniture and kind of inexpensive products that are shipped from China. I mean, you know, the demand has become that we want everything as cheaply as possible, and that has great environmental consequences. So that, you know, it really has to do with what are the sort of the values of an organization or of a company, and what regulations are out there protecting consumers from these long-term ills that we're beginning to feel the effects of.
You listen to Peter Werby's show. My guest is Britta Belli. She's the editor of E, the environmental magazine, and their website is emagazine.com. I'll have a link on my website, peterwerby.com, as well. You've been editor for how long now?
3 years.
3 years. So 17 years went on before your stewardship. Were you aware of the magazine? Did this turn out to be like kind of a dream job?
You know, I mean, I certainly was aware of it because for me, it's based locally to where I live and work, or was working. I was working in an alternative paper locally before this in Connecticut. So, I mean, I was aware of it. At the same time, it's a nationwide magazine. And I think our effects have been felt in many ways through our syndicated column, which is called Earth Talk. It's a question-answer column, very kind of straightforward, anything you want to know about environmental issues. And that's published. It's a free column, so if, you know, a media outlet wants to run it, they can. And it's published in over 1,800 outlets right now. So that's, I think, in many ways, E's impact has been felt through things like that, through its column. We have a couple books out there, a green living book in particular, where we kind of cover all the basics for greening your life, you know, your home, your children's rooms, your kitchen, that sort of thing. So.
Yeah, well, that we were talking about the bottom line rather than looking at the long-term consequences. E Magazine has numerous ads, full-page ads, in fact, for or proof that you can combine commodities with earth-safe products. Like on one of the most toxic products, I don't know, there's so many, is house paints. And yet on the back, there's a big full-page ad for natural oil-based paint and fashions and lots of other things. So you can, you certainly can have both. But let's talk a little about the history of E Magazine. Well, you know, I thought that was really interesting and well done throughout the pages of the current January-February edition, which is 20 years, the celebration of 20 years of the magazine. There's a column for, it must be each of them, huh? Or no, couldn't be.
It just happened to be 20, actually, but we just chose some of the leading topics that the magazine's covered over the years. And I think in a way to show, I really think in many ways that this magazine was ahead of its time in many ways, covering some of these topics that you see widely discussed today, such as climate change and overconsumption and issues with meat and climate change that, I mean, are becoming more widely recognized now, but really, you know, 10 years ago, we're not part of the common discussion. So,
when you look back through these pages of the 20th anniversary issue and you see some of the issues that were there before you became editor, which ones really draw your attention?
I mean, in some ways, there's certain, I think, topics that are sort of controversial that E has become known for covering. One of those is the issue of population. It's one of those sort of, you know, many environmental groups are kind of uncomfortable discussing the issue of population, which is primarily that no matter what we do to improve our renewable energy picture, simply the number of people is going to offset any benefits that we gain by our, you know, all of our greening initiatives. So it's a very kind of uncomfortable topic, but it's one that E has covered. I mean, we've had maybe six, I think, cover stories devoted to it over the years. So, I mean, one that we've certainly taken seriously. Another one that I think is somewhat controversial that E's covered quite a bit is the issue of meat and climate change, which is to say that the meat industry contributes more in terms of global warming gases than transportation does. I mean,
huh.
It's something that, you know, it was really under-recognized.
Tell us a little about that. I mean, that certainly surprises me. I'm sure listeners as well. How does it do that?
Well, one of the most important reasons is that methane, which is what, you know, pretty much comes from the back end of cows, is a much more potent global warming gas than carbon dioxide is. So it's simply the question of that. It's the question of the amount of petroleum that it takes to run these industries, the amount of pollution that they generate. So it's all the combination is really. There's just serious environmental consequences for the large-scale factory farming that we do today.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned population. It's a touchy subject because frequently people see it's people of color that have too many. I mean, that's the implication. So there's always these. Am I right? Is that where it becomes kind of controversial?
Well, I think certainly that's part of it. I mean, whenever you're trying to say, hey, maybe we shouldn't be having so many kids, I mean, I think it's just a very touchy issue in general. Certainly the number of children that you have is closely tied to education. So the other side of that coin is that, you know, there needs to be better family planning opportunities for people abroad. There needs to be greater education and living standards for people, because certainly the more educated people are, and the more aware they are of other options, the more that you can reduce sort of that unwanted population growth.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it has to be said that we who maybe we're not having this population explosion in the U.S. at the same time have a real consumption problem. So there's that end of it too. I mean, who's consuming the most? You know, and it's certainly Americans are sort of leading the world in terms of consumption.
Britta Bella is my guest. She's the editor of E, the environmental magazine. And we're talking about 20 years of environmental coverage. The anniversary issue is out now. It is the January-February issue. And so it comes out six times a year.
Right, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, how did I do? The math. I did great. Yeah, I was looking, and I remember this issue. It's called the Junk Mail Hall of Fame, and I didn't remember any of the statistics, but back then, E! Magazine reported that there were 62 billion pieces of bulk mail sent out each year, and now there's 90 billion. So there's 50% more pieces. And if you think about this, I mean, people, I'm sure you have, but I'm thinking of people listening. How much junk mail did you throw away today? I just threw away a big handful, even though I tried to go to these websites and you ask for it to be stopped. I mean, the process that this all went through of trees being cut down, I mean, maybe clear cut, then, you know, processed and made into paper, which is this terrible industry, and then, you know, printed and shipped and all that, and then you look at it for like an eighth of a second and throw it in a wastebasket. I mean, so when you look... Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Did you have a comment?
Surprised me was in updating that statistic, because, you know, we were looking at, okay, this is, we had written about this issue in the past, let's see where we're at today. I honestly would have expected that the junk mail would have gone down, you know, in recent years as people are emailing more. So much stuff is moving online. I mean, of course, we get a lot of spam email, but which surprisingly has environmental costs too. It's amazing that with computers, it's still people are printing out so much. They're printing out their emails. We don't seem to be doing anything in terms of saving more paper.
I remember, probably mid-90s, a little later, a friend of mine, when I didn't even like the idea of computers, not sure that I yet still do, even though I seem to be immersed in them as much as anyone else. And this friend of mine said, Pete, you're going to love this. This will end printing. You will not have to print another thing. Well, I begin to tell you, we could use here with where I work maybe a million sheets a year. I mean, it is absolute, and the whole area around here is just awash in wasted paper. I try to use both sides, but even still, you know, it's just amazing. But so, all right, so this has gotten worse. Are there areas that we've actually gained in? I mean, usually when you read environmental stuff, you want to go, you just want to go cut your wrist to be ahead of the curve, you know, so we don't all die like something in Omega Man or something, you know?
Well, I mean, certainly we've become better in terms of awareness. I mean, and we've seen just so many more people that are kind of comfortable with these ideas who are now questioning. They're looking at the labels of the things they buy. There's certainly been consumer pressure to increase the amount of organic. So now you see even Walmart is selling organic T-shirts and organic produce. So the idea of organics has certainly become much more mainstream, and that's brought down the costs, which has been great. In terms of getting chemicals from our plastics, from things like baby bottles, all of that, bisphenol A, you've maybe heard some discussions about that or BPA. Certain major retailers now are banning any products that contain this. Issues of Teflon, all these things that particularly affect people's health. I think that those are the things that really grab people. That's sort of their immediate concerns, you know, and there has been more consumer demand for greater regulation and control over these products. I mean, we've seen lead in children's toys from China and arsenic. I mean, like, you know, so these are serious concerns, and I think people are becoming much more savvy. Like, wait, we really need to know what's in the things we buy. That, and I would say also cars. I mean, we've, I think, very recently begun to see a real turnaround in the types of vehicles that people are looking for. They're looking for energy-efficient vehicles, you know, greater mileage, greater gas efficiency. Hybrids are taking off. We're seeing now major car companies that are really exploring electric vehicles. So, you know, it's been a long time in coming, but I think we've finally taken a step beyond the giant SUVs, and let me get as big a vehicle as I can possibly get.
You're talking here in Detroit, you know.
Right? That's a major turnaround now that we're seeing, I think, is that there's been a real... It seems that mostly recently, I mean, that's been where all the car companies are headed, is really in a greener direction. So that's been really promising.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's look at your January-February 2010 edition of E! The Environmental magazine. Britta Belli is my guest. She's the editor. And what an absolutely striking cover. This young boy, maybe, what, 6 years old or so, staring into the camera with bright blue eyes and a nice half smile. But it says, solving the autism puzzle. Yeah, and I looked... to see if I didn't read at all, but does this young boy have autism that's on the cover?
Well, you know what? The cover photo is actually, I mean, that's a stock image.
Okay.
So I'm not sure that we know the particulars about that actual boy, more as you said that he was a compelling looking face. The boy on the inside, though, it's sort of a kind of a striking black and white image on the inside of a young boy named Gavin Schultz, was sent to us by his mother, actually, who was interviewed in the story and does have autism. And there's actually photos of him in the issue that show his progression. So it's almost as though as you're looking at his face from, you know, say 18 months to 2 years, or I'm sorry, 5 or 6 years old, that you're seeing how you can almost see the disorder, sort of how it's affecting him just by looking at his face, which is kind of interesting.
Sure. But someone might say, well, wait a minute, autism, we've been hearing a lot more about that recently, but why in the world would an article about autism be on the cover of the Environmental magazine?
Well, I mean, there's so much, such a large kind of search for answers in relationship to autism, and it's only recently that the research has begun to turn its focus to environmental toxins and how they might be playing a role in this increasing disorder. I mean, it's just the numbers just keep going up and up. They've gone up tenfold since the 1980s, and now it's as many as like 1 in 100 children and 1 in 58 boys who are being diagnosed with autism. So something is certainly going on that researchers are saying has to be beyond just genetics. There must be something else going on, perhaps in our environment. And so they're beginning to study environmental toxins and mercury in particular.
Well, you know, there's, I forgot, in Latin, there's a logical fallacy, which means just because something happened after something else does, doesn't mean there's a cause. And that's the skeptic's argument against climate change or global warming as well. Yeah, there may be global warming, there may be autism, but the environmentalists are exaggerating the links, that there's not good hard evidence. When you hear skeptics like that and or the work that you and E! Magazine have been doing for so long. What's your reaction to it?
I mean, I think as with so many things, there are no simple answers. And I think oftentimes people want to just be able to point to one thing and say, well, this is it, and this has been solved. I know it with autism in particular that the closest anyone knows is that there's probably a genetic predisposition to this disorder, and that predisposition is being acted upon by various factors. And there's never going to be one chemical, one thing that we can pinpoint, but we do know that the number of toxins in our environment and in our bodies has increased tremendously over the years. So they do studies now. There was one that just recently came out regarding like flame retardants in our bloodstreams, and they know that if you had a child, a toddler, the amount of flame retardants in their bloodstream would be 3 times higher than in yours.
Wow.
The cumulative exposure that we've developed now of so many of these chemicals that have really become quite widespread is really a major public health concern. And, I mean, the rising number of UC allergies, asthma, cases in children, and certainly autism are all at least pointing to that direction. But, of course, there is no answer at this point. It's all still being researched and studied.
Well, I always say that on all these issues, you're better to err on the side of caution. I mean, if you take all the toxins out of the environment, you would and go, oh, it didn't solve the autism problem. At least you would have a much cleaner environment. And I tend to fall along the lines that you do, that probably predispositions are triggered by such a toxic environment. And what about the skepticism about global warming and climate change? It seems those folks, and for what it's been politicized, so it's almost the right wing, the conservatives that are the big deniers and skeptics. I mean, these scientists were trying to get a picture of this and see what's actually happening here, but then it's turned out to be this politicized issue that should just be about our environment.
Right. I mean, and I think what seems to me oftentimes becomes the point of confusion has to do with the difference between climate and weather. So if you say, well, the Earth is heating up and the oceans are heating up and, you know, this has been measured and you know, this is a factual thing, people will argue, well, we just had a terrible winter and it's been snowing like crazy, so how could there be global warming? But I think what's interesting is that it's the extreme temperatures that we're seeing, it's the extreme storms and weather events that we're seeing around the world, and I don't think there's anybody alive who could deny that we've been seeing some fairly extreme weather events in recent years, and they keep becoming more prevalent. We're seeing glaciers melting. I mean, there's very measurable effects of global warming. So, but to me, that's always been the big point of confusion for people has been just that issue of weather, that if it's a very cold winter or a very snowy winter, that somehow that negates global warming when in fact that really is unrelated.
Oh yeah, there's a right-wing news site that I look at all the time, and it has cold weather up all the time. Like, this is proof that there's not global warming. But I guess I don't want this to be the final question, but any sense of why this has been politicized? I mean, why, like I say, why isn't this a politically neutral issue that everyone would want to solve the problem, again, on the side of caution?
Well, you know, honestly, I think it comes down to really a financial topic once again, which is an issue of regulation. The idea of regulating industries, regulating particularly the fossil fuel industries, which have had a kind of a stronghold in this country for many years, is something that scares a lot of people, and they believe it's going to hurt American business. So it's really, I think, in the interest of protecting American business and established fossil fuel interests in this country. And as soon as you say, okay, yes, this does exist, the global warming does exist, and it's being caused by these emissions, so we have to regulate these emissions, well, somebody does pay the financial cost for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the broadcast. Congratulations to E! The Environmental Magazine for its 20th anniversary, 20 years of environmental coverage. The January-February issue is the 20th anniversary edition. Besides the autism article, there's all sorts of interesting things, talking about organic food from China, the year's best green gadgets, eco style. Yes, you can be fashionable and environmental as well. And Britta Bella is the editor. Congratulations on a great job, and we look forward to another 20 years.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're two payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing, and we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Line scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove line scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187. If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks. Detroit's Rock Station. 101 The Riff.
Hello, I'm Faith Hill. You know the expression, practice makes perfect? Well, maybe nowhere is that more true than in music. Music study is one of the most valuable ways that a student can spend time. A young person who practices and studies music reinforces teamwork, communication skills, self-discipline, and creativity. All the qualities that kids need to be successful in their other schoolwork. As parents, think about encouraging your children to try out several instruments at school until they find the one that really clicks. Talk to the school's music teacher about finding affordable lessons so your child can see his or her progress as time goes by. And please don't forget that your kids all have an instrument that's free and sounds wonderful, their voices.
A PSA brought to you by NENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at foreignlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
101 WRIF.
Yeah! Boom! Remember that?
Everything that rocks.
Come
WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Settle down, people. Settle down.
The Riff.